can get. He says, you know, he says, if I had worn the same jacket.
Recording.
One of those things, he wouldn't be able to train.
Okay. In compliance with the Open Public Meeting Act, this is a regular meeting of the Township Committee. Meeting notice has been posted at the Municipal Building and distributed to the Hunter and View, Courier News, the Express Times, and the Hunter and County Democrat, and the Star Ledger. Oh, and everybody please rise for the flag salute, followed by a moment of silence for our servicemen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Switches off. Okay, the minutes have been tabled to next meeting. So then can I get a motion to open to public comment limited to agenda items only?
I'll make a motion to open to public comments.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, if anybody has anything regarding the agenda items at this moment.
Lori Hoffman, Buffalo Hollow.
On this animal control update, I just read some of the last minutes that were posted online. Is it going to get as detailed as trying to register cats? You know, are you going to make a decision on all that? That's my thing is, I don't know how you can regulate the cats coming on your property. I know that's what the biggest concern is.
It's premature to. We're going to be looking at everything. Let's put it that way.
I wanted to know if you're making that decision tonight.
No. That's way down the road.
No.
Way down. And your concerns are duly noted, just so you know.
I don't know what you can do about it.
Anyone else?
Mayor, we heard all the Selco matter. I assume we'll hit
when the Selco item is there. Yep. Seeing none, can I get a motion to close?
I'll make a motion to close public comment.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. The first item is Resolution 39-2017, the committee salaries. About 3 years ago, when we were having budget problems, the salaries were dropped. $1,000 for each for the mayor and the committee. This is basically to put it back to where it was previously, which it actually was approved two years ago, but there was never really an official resolution to make it there. So this
salary ordinance now makes it official?
Yes.
Salary resolution.
Resolution.
So it's Resolution 39-2017. If I can get a motion.
I'll make a motion for Resolution 39-2017, Mayor and Committee Salaries.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Then we have Resolution 40-2017, purchase of portion of 661 Woodland Road. Actually, if you want to take that, Mike.
Okay. The committee had previously authorized an approach to the owner of these 2 acres, which adjoined township-owned property, 50% owned property off of Woodland Road, and links it to Mickwin Woods. For the number of years, there's been talk of connecting a trail through that, and this person's a corner of their property, a little triangular corner, blocks public access to go between the two. Finally, the owner of that property is receptive to our discussion, so the township hired an appraiser some weeks ago. The appraisal value for 2 acres came to $8,800. We have an informal agreement with the seller that she would accept $8,800. So there's a draft form of agreement of sale that we would, based on the resolution before us, if we pass this resolution, we would provide this draft sale agreement to her for comments, and this would authorize the mayor to sign this contract in substantially the same form as it's agreed to here. You should know that the price is $8,800, plus the township would bear the cost of the survey and phase one study and the like, which we estimate to be in the range of $10,000 total. We have an agreement with the New Jersey Water Supply Authority to reimburse half of qualified soft costs. Approximately $4,000 would potentially be reimbursed. So I would make a motion, unless there's any other discussion, for Resolution 40-2017, authorizing the mayor to enter a contract for the purchase of 2 acres of land at 661 Woodfund Road.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Mike, there's an ordinance authorizing this, right?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
So you're aware of the issue. It's a contingency.
Got it. Okay. Yep. Just want to make sure.
Okay, so first item on old business is the Selco Partners Verizon Wireless petition for township consent. So, the microphone, sir.
Sure, good evening. My name is Greg Meese, attorney for Selco Partnership, doing business as Verizon Wireless, and appreciate the council allowing us to get together with the planning board of the council last month to review some of the issues involved in Verizon's petition. Mr. Darminio of my office was present together with Catherine Windsor and Susan Schnars, a radio frequency engineer, and both Catherine and Susan are back this evening. We think we supplied you with all of the responses to all the questions that you had from the last meeting, including an exhibit of each of the proposed node locations, a photograph of the typical node. We had provided the Tewksbury resolution, had previously supplied the copy of the county resolution. Also, with respect to the equipment and the First Energy rules with respect to equipment on the pole, we provide you with that. I have a little bit of an update on that. And that's if there's a preference for equipment on the pole as opposed to equipment on the ground, that may be possible with a new pole set. Rather than using one of the JCP&L poles, depending on location, there could be a new CenturyLink or SQF pole installed. It would be a pole that would be similar in size and construction a typical wood utility pole. And rather than having the equipment on the ground, the equipment could be attached to the pole itself. I know there was a discussion. I just wanted to throw that out, that depending on location, that could be an option. We also supplied a sample radio frequency report to confirm that these facilities are very low powered and well within the FCC standards. And with respect to payment, the confirmation that there is a pole access agreement between Verizon Wireless and JCP&L. I almost sent it to you, but then I realized that there was a confidentiality clause right in the agreement, so I can't do that, but I can confirm that the agreement does exist. And lastly, we forwarded to you a listing of some of the on-air sites in the event that any member of the council wanted to go out and take a look at what they look like. But hopefully the photographs that we sent you were sufficient for that purpose. So we're hoping tonight that we can obtain the council's consent to move forward and work with you on a process for the review, whether it be with your zoning official or engineer, you know, work out the details.
Okay. I know there was a couple other questions that
I and you have to bear with me because it's hard to find information on this stuff. So I finally found something, and it may not even be relevant, but I just wanted to ask the questions. I think you might have the answers. The ground-mounted cabinet diplexer radio equipment, do they have cooling fans in them?
If so, it would be a fan about the same as you'd have in the back of your desktop computer. If there's no HVAC condenser in it, it would be a small...
Yeah, because I was reading something about ask if it's a passive or not a passive system, because they said it could be, the decibels could be a little bit loud.
Yeah, these don't make noise. They're not like, because it doesn't have a condenser in it. It's not an HVAC unit.
Okay.
Some of the equipment shelters, the large boxes you see do, mm-hmm. but typically equipment cabinets either have no fan, or if they do, it's of the size of what you'd get in your computer.
Okay, because that's what I think, that if they were too close to, I think these are actually going to be in the right of way. They're not going to be near somebody's window or anything. So it's just good to ask. No diesel backup generators. Covers, shrouds over the cabling, I'm assuming, right? Like the cable isn't going to be without a shroud over it.
Cable,
the fiber up there, or whatever, the cable.
That's a reasonable condition to, and I think we do that with all installations, but yes, to have the cabling going up the pole in a shroud so it matches the pole.
Any indicator lights on the telephone, on the poles themselves, that would flash at night?
No.
No. Smart wireless metering and fuse systems. Anything, do any guys know anything about that?
I'm not sure what you're referring to
okay.
there.
Okay. It says it avoids the need for the ugly meter cabinets and disconnect switches on the pole or the sidewalks. I don't know.
Is that as far as power?
Whatever the metering is for, smart metering.
Yeah, I mean, I think they run power from, power from somewhere off the line itself, so
okay.
I don't think that would really apply.
Yeah, the pictures showed meter boxes or meter pans on the all of the.
And then as far as the transformer boxes, if they're not on the pole themselves, on the ground, is there any possibility they're going to encroach outside of the right-of-way?
No, they have to be within the right-of-way.
They have to be, okay. And then if you put in a new pole, the height would be the same as a regular pole. It's not going to get any higher. You're not going to put those, like, you wouldn't substitute the node for like a little satellite dish that could see better if it had to go over to another pole. Okay, good.
Well, the new pole is 4 feet, I think, in the one case. Right. What that you're replacing is 4 feet taller than the existing pole.
Yeah, and then I thought I saw in the JCP&L that you can't put brackets up. So, like, the question I was going to ask about the brackets is, are you intending to sell space to other common carriers on the equipment you might put up, like if there is a bracket of some sort?
No, Verizon Wireless doesn't sell any space. They have these equipments just for the Verizon Wireless system.
Mm-hmm.
The utility provider, whether it be JCP&L or CenturyLink, they're required by law to allow others to access, provided there's sufficient room and it doesn't violate electrical codes or anything like
right.
that.
Well, let me just get up a second and just shake. This is what I was trying to avoid, just bringing it up. I mean, I'm sure it's not going to happen, but you see how this is what was planned here. This is not even in New Jersey, but this is how it ended up, because everybody got together and they were, so.
That's not even the same pole, though.
Well, that's what happened. They designed it this way, but this is how it ended up. So I'm just trying to.
It's not the same location.
This is what you have to read what they say here. They're just saying this is, you don't want to have this and have it end up like that. Because what I was reading is that sometimes the way it's drawn up, there are problems, and then they end up having to do something else. So I'm just bringing it up. So
no,
whatever we see, we want to have it look like.
Yeah.
I guess you guys agree, right?
I agree, but I think where you got this from was someone that was probably an objector to it. Cause
no, it was
just
it was
just facially, it's not the same pole.
It's
not
a very
the same location.
Well, yeah, it ended up that way. So, and then the other thing was, is there going to be some kind of a public hearing of this?
Yeah.
Not going to have a public hearing at all.
That's what this is.
That's what this is.
Well, actually, it was, it was more about a facility neighborhood notification that sometimes they sent, just like we did with the bridge. That's all I have to say.
Okay. The one thing is that the resolution that we got from the county that was passed, Mike had actually was down there, I think, a few days later, and what was interesting is engineering at the county level had not even seen that resolution, didn't even know anything about it.
Is that right?
Yes. So they were actually very interested to know, and because they were very concerned about anything going on the ground. That has a lot of something they're against, or is the way I got the
bigger challenges.
Yeah, bigger challenges. And some of the pictures that you had, the one like in front of Voorhees, and I'm assuming the cone is showing us where the box would go. There was in every picture there was a little cone next to it on one side or the other, and when whoever took the pictures, and I'm assuming the. So, like, when they...
The cone indicates where the pole location is going
to
go?
No, there's a picture of the pole, and then there's a cone next to it.
Okay.
So, I was assuming the cone is showing us where the box was going to go, next to the pole.
It's usually what it's about 5 or 6 feet
away. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, there's one, the one that's by in front of Voorhees, they actually show the cone in the floodway that could be... That's a storm runoff way, so it would be under feet of water potentially in storms, which I don't.
Could you tell me what you're referring to?
Yeah, the pictures that you gave the individuals, individual.
The lease exhibits, like the little.
Yeah, little pictures. The individual pictures, and then like in this, there's a little cone. My eyes can't be that good, right?
and which one you're referring to? Because I'm.
Well,
every one of them has it.
Pick one out, and you'll see a pole and a depiction of what the lines are, and you might see an orange cone next to it. And
yeah,
we're assuming that the orange cone is depicting where the panel box would be. That's because there's another architecturally drawn drawing to the left of it, and it shows approximately the distance away, 8 to 15 feet would be the meter panel or whatever you want to call it. I think part of the confusion is when we originally started this discussion is that everything was hanging on poles.
Yep.
And now we have things on the ground. And I just wonder what we're going to have next. The other thing is the infrastructure that you put on the ground as technology changes and advances, does that infrastructure get removed when it's no longer operable?
Yes. That would, again, that's
that would be in our resolution or...
Yes.
Okay.
That's a reasonable condition. If it's not utilized for a period of time, we would have to remove it.
A period of time? Is there a time that you have, you would say? Or
It's probably six to nine months is what I've seen in most resolutions and most ordinances, that if the equipment is not used for 6 to 9 months, the applicant would have to remove it at their own cost and expense to restore the right-of-way.
Mr. Mayor, if I may.
Yes.
And if you have a name of someone at the county engineering, we're happy to make sure he's well aware of what we're doing so that there's no misunderstandings with him.
I had spoken with Tom Matthews on multiple occasions, but I'm happy to speak with any other individual that you would like.
I don't remember his name, but is the director of engineering and his
director of engineering
directly under him. They looked with great interest because they hadn't seen the Freeholder resolution. But my question following up a little bit of where this is going, I think I can see that, and I understand completely, your technology plans are evolving a bit, it seems. And because I think 7 out of the 9 poles that or diagrams we have in front of us have the standalone box next to it, the Tewksbury resolution, as I read it, and the county Freeholder resolution, as I read it, don't cover anything that's not attached to the pole. They're very specific to the number of poles and the equipment attached to the poles. So for me, there's a question of how do we modify this language to cover new pieces of equipment in the right-of-way. And as I understand it, the agreements for an existing pole cover a very small distance around the pole. And I think your letter agrees as well that you'll need to go to the property owners where you want to put a pad next to the pole to get a new easement.
Not necessarily.
Well, except when it's on public land, I guess. But if it's
you said a lot in that one in that one sentence.
Yep. Okay.
With respect to the property owner, if there is already an easement in place that allows the placement of poles, then there's no further consent required.
For what distance around the existing pole? If it's 8 to
within the right of way.
So if they have one pole on their, if the right-of-way is, say, and help me because I'm not an expert on this.
The right-of-way might be the length of their property is what you're saying.
So if there's like a 12-foot strip the length of the property, if there's one pole, you can put anything anywhere in there.
It depends on what the easement states. Generally, the case law is the public right-of-way is just that, and that the owner of the fee, even if the land goes to the center line of the street, has given up all rights and owns the bare title to the land. There's an exception, a statutory exception, for the placement of new poles. If a new pole has to be installed, then the property owner's consent has to be obtained. So then you got to look at whether or not that consent is in place by way of an easement or not. If there is no easement that allows the placing of poles, then yes, we would reach out to the property owner and get the property owner's consent. But with respect to the placement of equipment, that's the consent that we would obtain from either the county or, if it's a county right-of-way, both the county and the municipality.
So just to make sure I understood, if you were putting in a new pole, and in two cases you are putting in a new pole, you need a new agreement with that property owner to put in a new pole, even if there's already a pole in that right-of-way.
Depends on whether or not there is an easement that allows it. If there is no easement allowing the installation of poles that would cover us, then yes, we would have to seek consent from the property owner.
Okay.
So what we've done is, and we have title orders on each of these.
That's what I read.
To confirm, where do we stand with the property owners on these new poles?
Do you have any update on that tonight, or is that in process?
It's in process.
But if they do have a pole, your position is that putting a cabinet 8 to 15 feet away is covered by the existing easement for that pole?
The way, yeah, and I'd be happy to share the case law with your counsel. There's several cases that discuss the nature of the right-of-way being that the property owner really has nothing left. And then there was a statutory amendment back about 20 years ago that stated that if a new pole has to be installed, the property owner's consent must be obtained. So that's when you have, when you're looking for a new pole, you have to, all right, is there an easement in place that allows this, or is this a new agreement?
And then so the other half of what I raised, whether putting a cabinet on the ground is covered by language that says you have the right to attach equipment to the pole?
I don't read the agreement with the county that limiting.
Okay.
And I would believe that would be covered in the general municipal consent for utilization of the right-of-way.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure if there was a preference. If we have an opportunity to set a new pole with equipment on the pole, would the council prefer that?
How close would the new pole be to the existing pole?
It would depend on the wires, but it's in the same right-of-way. It would be, you know, it would be a pole that would look very similar to the existing.
I guess my point is, if it meant putting a new pole 15 feet from an existing pole in order to mount it on a pole,
probably
that's one scenario, versus, you know, a quarter mile from the existing, or whatever, the, you know, 100 feet from the existing
pole. It would have to be close by.
Yeah, if it's 15 feet away, that's, I think, a different scenario.
Okay. And I wasn't sure if that's why we wanted to throw that open. We weren't sure if there was a preference one way or the other. The pole, yes, would have to be close to the existing.
I don't know if you want this detail here, but the county engineer in the freeholder resolution, you could just take the citation if you want. Article 2, paragraph B of that freeholder resolution, they were very clear to say that that does not grant approval for new poles or cabinets, because it says that it allows equipment in or on poles or other structures owned by the public utility. Is that just the wording? I mean, I just throw that to you if you want to look at it later. But the county's position was, right, the engineering department was that this didn't allow them to do what you appear to be asking to do.
All right, and maybe there's, I'll discuss it with them, but yeah, maybe the confusion is we don't actually own the pole.
They know that.
Oh, okay, because the pole would have to be set by the CLAC or the utility, and then we would mount on that.
Yeah. But in two cases, you do own the pole in what you're proposing here.
No, we don't.
Tilson owns the pole.
Well, that's the CLAC.
That's
the
CLAC. That's, I mean, the two new. Yeah.
Well,
And Verizon, in my history, hasn't had a good shot with drilling holes in poles. Last week they took me out. They tore a fiber out when they drill a hole because they didn't call before they dig. And that was Verizon. Nice picture of them doing it, too.
Wow.
Right out of the CT and right out of the vault. A quarter mile of fiber out of the ground. I guess you're also going to talk with, because a couple of the locations are, they're good locations on 513, but the one on 513 on the eastbound side, the county 2-3 years ago, when they would have overburden, would just dump it on the side of 513 because it used to be a sheer drop-off. And one of the locations you have is in that, what is really loose soil. So I guess you're going to have to take on the excavation to shore this up, because rain will just tip that thing over, because it's not designed to take weight. They just kind of came along and said, this is a cliff here, let's fill it in, and threw some salt, grass seed on it. So it's just to be aware that there is...
Yeah, I have to assume that the engineers that went out and located the...
They put one in a floodway.
That one, I would be very surprised if that's the case, just given these cabinets can't really sit in water.
Well, that's what I thought.
They're okay to be rained upon, but they can't be sitting in water.
But I've seen feet of water go through that location. So,
and which one was that again?
Right in front of Voorhees.
Voorhees? I just school. Want to have them flag that so that make sure.
So I just, you don't need any, I've seen electricity and water, and it's not nice. So.
No.
Trying to eliminate a biased school, arcs and sparks.
Yep.
Could I just clarify the Tewksbury resolution again? Did you say that does cover cabinets 10 to 15 or 8 to 15 feet away from the pole? Or just setting new poles?
I'm sorry, I was referring to the county.
The county, but also the Tewksbury resolution that you just sent.
I'd be honest with you, I'm not that familiar with it.
Okay.
I didn't, was involved in it.
Okay. I mean, the reason I'm honing in on those two a little bit is where
how we word our resolution to make it sure it covers what we want and what you've agreed with too in the past, so that it's...
I was hoping we could take the best of, or, you know, interesting points out of both existing documents and ask our attorney to craft one that works for us. And that's why I was... The diagrams you sent to the county for Tewksbury showed cabinets next to the poles, and I just don't know if the resolutions were done before the design had changed, or if, you know, which came first. As I said, when you came here, we thought it was just going to be on the poles, and it turns out for engineering it needs to change. I don't know when the Tewksbury resolution was done, if that does cover cabinets on the ground, because I don't read it that way, but I'm not an expert, so I was just looking for your advice whether...
Resolution, they just changed the title to limit it to the five locations we were looking at that point in time.
So that's one of the original ones?
I believe it was from May of 2016.
I mean, I think what
that would sound right.
I think what you're looking for is to make sure that the cabinet is close to the pole, and I think if provided it meets the JCP&L requirement, then that would be...
That we have the right wording for this cabinet, because it doesn't seem to appear in there wording for putting the cabinet, so it's, you know,
we can provide you with specific wording to cover location, size, and distance from pole. Would that be?
I think that's kind of what we're looking for, you know. So because it's not clear in there. At least I don't read it, and Mike didn't read it, and to that extent that it had that in there.
So those cabinets that can't be attached to the pole. Here's the language.
Right.
They can't be more than 10 feet, they have to be...
This size within this size. The pad is going to be X big and, you know...
Yep.
And this resolution would be site-specific and a number specific.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Okay. This would be for this request and this many locations. And then if you wanted to come back and do, obviously, another road, we already have the groundwork done of what we want.
And the related question... Going back to where we've been in a couple of these conversations over these meetings, I think we've learned now that JCP&L manages the poles. So if a pole either degrades or, you know, gets hit by a car or something, JCP&L manages that. Who manages the the equipment, the box next to the pole, if it's 10 feet away and a car hits it.
That's Verizon Wireless.
That'll be Verizon Wireless, okay. But Verizon Wireless doesn't manage even the new poles. The new poles get managed by a CLEC.
Correct. The new poles would be either CenturyLink or the Tilson CLEC, which is SQF is the name of that. They would manage the pole. Verizon Wireless responsible for the antenna and the equipment.
And what is Verizon's capabilities to respond if, like, say, if a car hits the cabinet on the side of the road? You know, we know JCP&L comes immediately. They know some of the other carriers, cable TV, whatnot, may not come for months. Where's Verizon?
I think Verizon Wireless's record is probably best in the industry. I think even during Sandy, I think they were the ones that were operating. They were the ones that were on.
But so, you know, physically, like, where are their depots for their repair trucks and whatnot?
I don't know specifically where they're...
Mostly for the wireless sites. So all our wireless sites are 24/7 alarmed back to our NOC, which is located in Bedminster. So we can always tell at any given moment if the site goes into alarm, and that could be a car crash or something just goes wrong with the equipment, it fails. So that the NOC immediately notifies the cell tech on call or the operations manager on call, and then somebody is dispatched at that point. So that's instantaneous because we're basically on call 24/7. As far as equipment goes, we have equipment locations in Branchburg. We also maintain equipment in Wayne. You know, depending on the extent of the damage, that would certainly come into play if it's just a couple of pieces versus, you know, the entire thing is destroyed. We do, you know, we are building sites constantly, so there's always an influx of equipment coming in. So something could be diverted from a site that was perhaps going to get built to get this site back online, and then, you know, we would have to worry about the back end of replacing that equipment for the site that's going on there further down the road. So we do keep, you know, backup standard materials always on hand of stuff that, you know, either may break or go down or that kind of thing. So I don't think it would be very long, but it would, of course, depend on the extent of the damage to the site.
And that's what I'm wondering, if we'd have, you know, weeks of a piece of crumpled box out on the side of the road, or
from the extent that, you know, we also have KPIs that we have to meet in terms of performance. So if that goes off the air, it's definitely affecting our KPIs. So we don't want to go for an extended period of time with that site off the air, because once it's turned on the air, you know, it's customer serving, and that affects how we perform as a wireless carrier. So we're not, you know, it's immediately dispatched, the alarm, and we're out there immediately. So nothing goes off the air for an extended period of time unless, you know, natural disasters where we're addressing what we can address, and you know, kind of looking at the bigger picture, what we can fix immediately, do some more repairs, that kind of thing. So systematically with larger type events, you know, we kind of try to address what's, you know, safety for our cell techs, what we can get to if you're looking at a larger scope disaster like Sandy or something like that. But for the most part, you know, our turnaround time, we try to get that site back on the other same day. And we have people going out at night, so it's not limited to daytime hours. There's folks on call 24 hours a day.
Thank you.
You have any questions, Mark, Tom?
Only that in the resolution, if you're going to prepare one for us, is that where we're going with this?
Well, it's either if they do or we put one.
A decommission after a period of time where it's not operational, it would be removed from the site?
I mean, take your default one and then add the language for the pad and then also the language for the specific location IDs, and then we can have Dick review it, and I mean, then if that's all there, I don't see any, I mean, then we can get it approved, but obviously it wouldn't be approved tonight, obviously, but I wouldn't expect you to need to come back. It would just be then on our agenda for the next meeting, unless there was some discrepancy, and then we would make you aware of that prior to 5 o'clock, you know.
Fair enough. What will the next meeting be? I'll try to get something. I would promise you by the end of the week, but I've got a tough couple of days
19th?
Coming up. The 19th?
Mm. 19th, yes.
Yep. So maybe by Monday?
Mayor, can I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
Process-wise, Greg, so you understand, this came before the governing body back in, I think it was December or November. Then there was some discussions. I think Catherine came to a meeting and made some presentations. Then it was decided that it made some sense to go to a joint meeting of the planning board and the governing body. I wasn't at that meeting, so I may have missed some of the discussions, but Catherine has been very busy going around from town to town here. I've sat through a number of these particular proceedings, and just a couple of questions. I may have misunderstood. I thought Catherine, the engineer in East Amwell, they brought in the engineer for Verizon. I don't know if they did that before the planning board or not. He came in and he brought a box in and he told them all about the ground cover and the shroud that goes over the ground cover. It was very instructive. But I thought the engineer was saying that JCP&L was not allowing these on their poles. Was that? Did I misunderstand that?
JCP&L will not allow Verizon Wireless to attach its equipment to an existing JCP&L
pole. That's itself. What I thought. Yeah.
So for an existing JCP&L pole, if we, if we want to use that one, if the municipality's preference is that we use the existing infrastructure, to attach our equipment, we would have to put it on the ground. It would have to be the ground mount that we're talking about.
Okay.
The only way we could get away with that, so to speak, is if we set a new pole that would either be owned, by another CLAC, and then we could put the equipment, attach it directly to the pole itself, so it wouldn't be on the ground.
Who makes that decision as to whether it's going to be on a JC next to a JCP&L pole, or it's going to be a new pole? Does the township have any input in that?
Yes and no. Certain JCP&L poles can't be used just because there's too much stuff up there. So there's a limitation there. What we've done is presented exhibits showing the proposed locations where we can use existing poles and where new poles, because of the stuff that's currently there, needs to have new poles.
Right.
And what we discussed this evening earlier was, in addition to those, if there was an overriding preference for a design with equipment on the pole, we could take a look at that in lieu of those existing poles where we'd have to put the equipment on the ground.
Okay.
And I found that there, I guess there wasn't such a desire, right?
So for JCP&L poles, they have to, any pole that would be a JCP&L pole has to have a ground-mounted equipment.
That's correct.
Okay. And then the choice then is either a new pole or a ground-mounted equipment on the JCP&L pole.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Can I just to clarify, but the antenna can be allowed on the pole? Because all of your pictures show an antenna on a JCP&L pole, even though it says no equipment can be mounted on a JCP&L pole.
Yes, for those.
With the exception of the antenna.
For those specific JCP&L poles, there are some poles where no, they can't because of the wiring that's there.
They got a voltage on the top.
Equipment can be on top, but the equipment must be on the side.
Yep.
So at the planning board meeting, was there designation of the specific sites where the poles are going?
Well, that's what they came back with. That was the request at that point, and they came back with the documentation that showed the pictures of the poles, and there's seven of them that there's existing, two that are new.
Right.
Those are down on the Observatory Roads side of Voorhees Park, and then the other ones, because there are some concerns about locations. Like I said, they'd have to go to Kelly with some of those locations. But the one was, there was a residential area. It's going actually right by the Sunoco gas station. So it's not in front of the people's houses, which was my concern, because there's a couple houses there. The rest of them are further down in more open areas.
Was there a discussion with the planning board and Verizon about the issue of whether there's a process for getting the property owner involved as to the location of the pole? Because what we learned in East Amwell was there is a range of areas that a pole can be put in. There's radio frequency issues, and the pole can be put within those 800 feet or something like that. So my question was, and a lot of towns are wrestling with this issue, which is, should the property owner have a say? Aside from what Greg says with respect to the legal issues involved in whether they have the right to locate the pole, the question is, do you want to have something built into your process that allows notice to the property owner, so that the property owner can have some discussions with Verizon and somebody on behalf of the township to say, look, that particular pole is going right in front of a beautiful tree. I love that tree. Can you move it over 20 feet? Or, you know, I got a pole here. Can you move it 200 feet to the west or the north or whatever? So the question is, process-wise, do you want to have some situation where there is the ability to get input from the individual property owner?
Well, so on this, well, I mean, in this scenario, there's none that are in that, they're open, they're fairly open sections. The only one that's the most, you have Voorhees, which is it was one, and then the one at the Sunoco. Mm-hmm. It's really the most.
Okay. And I'm hearing what
invasive
you're saying.
To
remember,
people.
You're setting some precedent.
Right.
But
okay.
Aren't we
so
also...
So you want to sort of not necessarily... Yeah, and I
and
understand...
And that's where I think we're saying where the review...
What Verizon is saying mm-hmm. is that, okay, and what you're saying, the deal is for X number of properties. But, A, if you do it for Verizon, you're going to have to do it for any other cell tower provider, okay? I'm not sure how that works when you're doing it with respect to a discrete number of poles, et cetera. But, you know, what you're doing is kind of developing a process here because you don't want to have to redo this process every time Verizon identifies another area that requires a supplement. So I think you want to think through some of the process issues here. So and one of the important ones is do you want the property owner to have some kind of say? So if you want that to be the case, then there has to be a process developed for that. And from my prior discussion, Greg, you can confirm or anybody from my understanding was that Verizon was open to that. They were not saying, it's the way it is, you know, boom, this is what we want it. They were willing to work cooperatively within some range. And Greg, do I express that correctly?
Yeah, and I think let me throw up a suggestion.
Sure,
to
go right ahead.
That. For future nodes, what I would suggest so that we don't have to keep coming back to the council, would be subject to the review by your zoning officer or township engineer.
I want it to come back here personally.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But
that's an option.
That's an option.
That's one of the three options. The two he mentioned are good. Some towns want him to go to the planning board. So those are the four, I would think, unless you could...
I mean, that's where we went to the planning board, just so the planning board would be aware of it, because I don't know,
exactly
like I said,
right.
Verizon, Sprint, the next company. I don't think it's something that I want in the hands of the zoning. I think either on the planning or on the township committee. Now that we understand it, I mean, and I think, you know... If we had all this information on day one, but I don't think it was available on day one, it would have probably been a different conversation. But at this point, you know, we've learned on this, and I'm sure this Verizon has learned along this process too. And that's why we wanted to go to the planning board to get the specifics for the polls, and I think to identify if there are property owners that would have... you know, issue with any of these poles because they were a 10,000-foot view with some red dots on them. Mm. So they got more specific with the poles. And that's where the concern was, is what, you know, is getting the property owners involved. And there's only, like I said, really one, which is the Sunoco, that has any proximity to residences. And the other ones are, you know, either on county land or large plots mm-hmm. of open land. The new poles are... you know, large plots of, you know, land with no house views. So as long as it's realistic that, you know, our thought process that it went to the planning board for a review of, the, you know, what it is, they provide specific locations that allows us the opportunity to adjust. And then if it is something that is, hey, this is where it has to go, and there's a, you know, then we can, you know, that still, I think, leaves us that open door to bring a resident in if we have this, because it's for specific review of that site.
I get it.
Am I overthinking it, or am I underthinking it?
Well, I mean, you guys get to decide, so just we're offering suggestions,
yeah.
Okay? But I would think that a standardized process that, you know, has a situation where, okay, they want to come in, they identify the locations. Maybe there's a notice sent out to the property owners, somewhat analogous to like a subdivision or a site plan without any of the complexity. And then, I mean, look, it's up to you, and maybe you would start out kind of naked looking at the applications, but ultimately it would be ideal so that there's a process that's established. Maybe it goes to the zoning officer. If there's an objection by the property owner, maybe it comes to you or something like that. But the one issue that you want to have an objective way of doing things and have decisions made by a situation where it can't be argued that there's politics involved, all right? So ideally, the zoning officer is, and the reason you have a zoning officer is kind of separate from the governing body, and so it's an administrative officer that presumably is exercising, you know, objective determinations and can't be accused of political, naturally they do, but so ideally you'd move to some kind of process that was more objective, in my opinion. But, I mean, look, you folks get to decide the rules here within range. So you can work it out the way you want. And this is a new area. I mean, I think Verizon is learning. Towns all across this county and the state are learning. Everybody's trying to figure out some way to accommodate this new technology and kind of get used to it and recognize we all want to have cell phone. So I think everybody's kind of feeling their way along here, and that there's different approaches, but it's up to you. But I would try to move it towards some kind of objective approach.
Yeah, and that's where I think that's where we went with the planning board, yeah. And then wanted specifics on the polls.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure adding more layers into it is necessary. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, if they needed to have whatever another section going to, again, getting that this documentation from moment one to the planning board for review and question, and then pushing it up to the township committee to say, yes, we're good with this, or no, because this is in front of this house or that house, and can we move it 500 or 100 or whatever feet to be out of a line eyesight, or that's, you know, gives us that opportunity. Adding another...
The one concern that I have, Mayor, I want to, you know, suppose there's an election going, right? And you're running against Joe Jones, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it comes along that somebody wants to move it. Maybe it's a little unreasonable. They're calling up somebody who's running for election, trying to, you know, influence what's going on. I would rather see, again, it's your call. And I just raise this to you to think about, you know, the
yep,
potential
I understand.
Political pitfalls.
But
that
I don't
get into.
I don't like it that way.
Okay, well, right. You're the mayor.
Unless somebody else can tell me, I just...
I think what he's saying is it would be our due diligence to have some language in the resolution that gives the homeowner some protection. I know these 9 or 14 or whatever we
have. I have no problem with that. I think it's...
I think that's what he's saying, yeah. That so that we have a general resolution that in the future, if someone else comes here and wants to go up Bunvale Road with these nodes, that the mechanism is already in place. I think that's where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with the notification.
Respond to that. With respect to this discussion, I think that kind of notification will inject the politics where it doesn't belong. I think that the zoning officer is a person that really should review location and say, you know what, there's a better location. Can you move it 15 feet away? But I think that you've seen by what we've done, Verizon Wireless is very sensitive to where these are going to be located. And he's right. We're doing this around the state. We don't want objections to what we're doing, so we're trying to be very careful where they're selected. I think as soon as you start notifying individual property owners, that's when they're going to start calling you up, Mayor, and saying, hey, what can we do?
That's what I think, too. So
that becomes, well, I think, a different process.
If I were a property owner, I mean, this is the call you have to.
Well, make. I mean, then do we just say it goes to the zoning officer for review? And then, but it's at the end of the day, I still would want to see the final decision at this level.
Oh, I agree with that. Well, that's fine. But I think what Greg and I perhaps have a disagreement because of the different ways that we look at this thing. He's looking at it from Verizon's standpoint. I'm looking at it from people knowing that. What I want to protect you against is somebody comes running in here some meeting and say, why did you allow them to put that telephone pole in front of my house without telling me that that was going to occur? And that's the whole...
Pole is a different scenario. I see a new pole as a different scenario.
Okay. I mean, look, like I say, that's your call. I mean,
they still have to do their due diligence to find out if they can even put the pole there and that the property has allowed the easement is there.
As you can see, there's a lot of work that goes into each one of these before we even get to this stage.
Personally, I'm closer to where Mark is coming out, that I think you know, 2 years from now, the boxes will be different, the antennas, everything's going to be different. I think it should keep coming back here. But if it establishes precedent that would be harder to get in later, I'm not at all against putting in a property notification, property owner notification clause to set a precedent for next time, but still keeping the decision.
No, I have no problem with the decision here. I'm talking about the long run, because
that's what
ultimately you're going to have, I assume, a lot of this, and I think Verizon is probably moving in this direction, and 10 years from now, we'll, just like we're used to cell towers, we're going to be used to the little boxes all on the telephone poles.
And I think you have to also think yourself, like if it was happening at your house, how would you feel? What would you... And on my biggest fear is like the Frankensteins with the you know, everybody's going to come in here because I got accosted in a store the other day by somebody that I didn't even know knew about this. And they were like, what's going on about an amendum and this and that and the other? And, you know, and we're not technical people. We don't have the answers. And that's what I'm afraid of. I think there's got to be something that we should do to make sure it doesn't become a situation where it's got legs and... We can't answer the questions or have the ordinances that we can't even point out why this ordinance isn't there and we let somebody do it this way here and not this way. And
I think Mike had a good point, too, in terms of you can always, if it's working great 5 years from now, it's not a big deal, you can always pull back. But you're going to have trouble going. If you haven't done it now, you're going to have trouble with some other carrier comes in here and says, hey, you know, you did it for Verizon, you're going to do it for AT&T or whatever.
I think you've done that tonight with the requirement for a specification on the size of the pad, distance to the box, the height of the box, size of the box. And one of the things that I found myself doing now because I'm doing this is looking at the existing telephone poles and the stuff that's up there, and compared to what we're proposing, this is really a lot less than what's already up there in terms of the transformers and the other things. So. Although I know this is a new technology, and there's some people that, you know, are worried about new technology, if you just look at it as equipment, it's really no different than what's up there already in terms of size and the nature of what's there. So I think Dick is right. Once you start seeing these in play, people are getting used to them, and it's going to be all right.
But I agree with you, what's up on the pole you get used to, but I think if a new box were on my front lawn and I had a sidewalk and front lawn and now I had to mow the lawn around it, that's different. I think that's materially different. That's why I think many of us were concerned when the plans changed significantly. It's like, oh, we thought it was just a little thing up on the pole, drive past. But
interesting when Catherine brought her, when they brought the engineer in with the equipment, it's bigger when you see it individually than it looks like when it's on the pole. It's not horrible, but it's the pictures sort of minimize the size of the equipment. It's not, you know, and it's worthwhile looking at it, and that's why I thought it was very worthwhile, Captain, when you had the engineer bring it in so somebody could actually physically see what it was looking like.
I also heard, I don't know, you guys would probably know technically, if other carriers come in, I guess they use different spectrum and things, and they want their own box. They can't share your box, so suddenly you've got four of these boxes around a pole.
Well, they wouldn't be on the same pole.
No, around, on the ground.
Yeah, but the pole is only going to support really one antenna on the very top.
Well, if they're not going to allow any other carriers on there with their equipment, I mean, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not technical.
That's a good question. Mm. Could you have more than one antenna?
Depends on the pole.
Oh, okay.
If it's a new pole, yes. If it's an existing, probably not, just because there's other wires up there.
That's what I heard.
But if it's a brand new pole, you'd probably be able to mount on the side.
Okay, so side mount.
I mean, I saw one with five boxes around it. Oh. So a new pole was it?
Oh, okay, new pole. Okay.
Yeah.
Just a couple. One other question. Escrow. You probably want to ask for an escrow, and I don't think we created one here, Catherine, right? We want to ask for an escrow because that'll pay for the fees for the township, and Verizon has been very fair about that.
That was discussed in the planning board.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in...
As long as it's reasonable, we can get a check out to you right away.
That's fine.
Reasonable.
Yes, we're always reasonable.
and maybe Dick, I don't... sort of related, but I think the resolutions would contemplate that we have an engineer review of each site, and I think for these nine specific poles, given that they're in a county road, I think we'd want to have the county engineer do their review first, and then we review after that.
Okay. Do you need an engineer reviewing it? I mean,
well, that was discussed at the planning board, yeah. And the planning board's position was that if there's a problem, the residents are going to look to us, so we should have our. And I think it was agreed that Verizon would pay for the additional review.
Okay.
But I think just for practicality, we'd have the county do their review first because they obviously have more resources.
I don't think the county review is required under their agreement, though.
Maybe that's why the engineering department didn't know about it. They assumed that they would have review.
I think it's a notification procedure that we submit to them. But it's not something, I don't believe we've set it up that they have to review each one. And generally,
so on a county road, the county's not concerned with what the boxes are.
It's just a notification?
Next to the county road.
We send in our drawings to them, and the attorney routes it. I forget his title, Tom Matthews. He's like director of roads.
He's
something,
an engineer.
Something.
Engineer.
He's the one that's reviewed all these up until date. So basically, I send the plans to the attorney. He sends it to Mr. Matthews. Mr. Matthews has said, okay, like literally, that's all he says is, okay, you can proceed. The attorney lets me know, and then we proceed. So that's how it's been with the county.
Okay. Then maybe it's just that simple that you get that before we review it. Whatever their review is, it's going to be their review. Okay.
Mike, did the engineer indicate what he would actually be looking for?
No, I mean, we didn't talk about those technicalities, but
we might want to have some standards as to, so they know, or, you know, because I'm not sure from an engineering standpoint. I assume that Verizon, I mean, you'd want to have some standards that the engineer would look at, right?
That's why I think it's really better with your zoning officer and your construction official, because these are really not heavily engineered items. They're attachments. A new pole set is literally just pop a pole in the ground. The utility does that without even our involvement.
I thought that was in the resolution that we already passed and took back, that any construction would still go through our construction official.
Yeah.
Because we're not going to be in a position to know whether it's
correct.
Correct.
You know, correct. Whether the bolts are the right. You know,
we would apply for all necessary permits with your construction department. Usually it's an electrical permit and maybe a construction permit. But
I was thinking more, especially with the pads, you know, for traffic and the like, you're putting these on the shoulders of county roads. I assume they've got engineering standards for how far back they need to be and whether they need, you know,
but I would think
crumple zones or what, I don't know what cabinets should have when they're right now.
I would think your
road.
Construction official is used to reviewing those, and those instances where, I mean, the one location you got me worried that if it's in a gully, I mean, we better know that.
Water.
But in that instance, I would think that he would certainly have the authority to call in the engineer as he deems fit for consultation.
Yeah, and I was just saying if the county has a review process and we have a review process, let's get them to take care of their issues first so that we don't review and then county has different rules and we're going back and forth.
So we can supply you with this consent first.
That would be my
assumption. I think it would make sense on that end.
I see a greater involvement of the township engineer on a township road but on a county road.
That's my point. These nine that we're talking about here, to get to a resolution for these nine, they're all on one county road. So let's leverage the county expertise.
Do you have any idea how, like, I don't know, 2-3 years out, projections for this area of how many more of these you would need to roll out?
I think it would all depend on capacity. So, I mean, you know, I talked a little bit about the last time I was here about how training usage is increasing, and as a group, as we become more mobile, there's going to be just higher usage, so you're going to see your standard macro sites starting to exhaust, and you're going to use this as a way to complement the existing system, offload some of that capacity that's on those existing macros, and then you're putting these particular node locations closer to the user, so the experience is actually better to them. You know, it's all going to depend on growth in the area. You know, that's going to affect us. So if it stays fairly rural out here, it could be quite some time before we have to come back and revisit this. Mm-hmm. If you guys see some exponential growth in terms of, you know, residential areas or, you know, perhaps if some company decides to relocate here, it might have to be something we take another look at. But, I mean, I talked a little bit about the last time I was here. We're constantly looking at the sites.
Mm-hmm.
They send us information back, and we're able to use that to analyze it. And, you know, one of the key indicators for this particular area was the sites were not able to handle the vastness of the area that they cover, because they do cover a much larger footprint out here than they do in, say, like a Parsippany or Morristown. So they're forced to carry a lot more traffic because just of the area that they cover. So when we look at those performance metrics from the equipment, we're able to evaluate, you know, how what we deployed, for instance, these nine nodes. How did that affect the area? Did it do what we thought it was going to do based on, you know, the various models and algorithms that we look at and run? So we evaluate it, you know, before it goes on the air and project what we think we can do. Then we're going to take a look at it once those sites go on the air. And, you know, it's all going to depend on the growth of the area.
Mm-hmm.
But we, you know, we would know that right away. I mean, our cell techs are local to their areas, too. So, you know, at any time one of them could pick up the phone and say, listen, I've noticed that they're putting a new strip mall in here. You know, this site is already kind of on the borderline of being capacity exhaust, so we might want to start looking at how do we fix that before it becomes a bigger problem than it is. So we're always looking at those kind of things, and that's what's great about having local people out here, kind of giving us a heads up when something new pops up, or, you know, because I'm in the office, they're out in the field, so
right.
That helps us. So, you know, you're not going to see the same growth that I'm seeing in Morristown, but, you know, it just depends on the area.
And I think that we're lucky right now that this is going along a county road. Like, I'm thinking, is there a time when it would be in a residential area where you'd really have people up in arms over
them? One of the nice things about the nodes is that we take the pressure off covering that road, and we can kind of use the macros now to, you know, even if it's 2 to 3 miles, I can move that. Once I take the pressure off the roadway, I can then look and re-optimize my macro sites. And we talked a little bit about that. So instead of having something so close to homeowners, I'm covering you from that site that's 3 or 4 miles away that you guys have accepted as part of the landscape, and I use that to better serve the places where I can't get into with a standard telephone deployment or some other type of deployment.
Makes sense.
Okay. One other question, Greg. Is there a shot clock running here from your standpoint?
Good question.
Probably.
Or what is it?
150 days.
From tonight?
From the original request?
When was the original request?
Long time ago.
So what's the shot clock? When does it expire? Will you guys agree to waive it if necessary?
Yeah, we're working with the town. We'll waive the shot clock and work this out. Yeah, I'm not sure when the original application...
You'll put that in a letter to us?
Yeah.
You'll put that in the letter, right?
So you're going to...
These boxes wait, right? For the ground unit.
The ground unit?
Yeah.
Jeez.
The box itself, the equipment's probably like 100 and 150 pounds.
Are any valuable things in the box that are prone to theft or anything?
They have a very similar to like the telco boxes that you would see at sites or like Verizon or CenturyLink has. There's a special, I don't know what they call it. It's similar to a key, but it's a specific wrench that's designed so most folks wouldn't have access to these wrenches to open them. No, I think it's too heavy. So there's going to be backup batteries that go into this box just to keep the site up. If it loses power, it usually lasts anywhere from 6 to 8 hours, depending on usage. The equipment would run anywhere from 40 to 50 pounds, depending on what area we deploy. So I say all in all, you're probably hovering between 350 and 400.
Do you have an experience with issue of thefts? There's no precious metals inside or anything like that kind of draw them to...
We used to use copper to brand our equipment. Mm-hmm. We've gone to galvanized steel.
They take them from our couch,
so we've gone to galvanized steel, so that's kind of stopped the copper theft that was occurring because it got ripped from oil. We were replacing it all the time.
Yeah.
So we kind of moved away from copper to something less desirable if people wanted to steal that. So for the most part, we haven't had any issues with theft. I would say in Newark, where stuff is on rooftops and people, you know, congregate on rooftops, we've had some damage to equipment just because people, you know, knock stuff off center line or bump the antenna or knock something that it's mounted to. But for the most part, all of our installations are fairly solidly put together. We don't see a lot of that happening. So I haven't seen a theft of one of those boxes. I've seen, maybe graffiti.
Miami.
No, I mean, I've never seen it happen.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Mark, can I ask a question, Deb?
if I may.
Yes.
From a public safety point, how much power does this thing use, like voltage-wise? Mm. And how do you shut it off if it catches on fire or a car lands on top of it? Because in that respect, if that's energized,
it's just
and there's somebody trapped in a car, we can't do anything for that person.
It's just a typical house connection. Was it 120?
It's like 60 amps. It's like a 60 amp breaker.
Yeah, it's not.
Where would that breaker
it's
be?
It's not a high voltage thing.
Usually within the cabinet box, there's usually what they call most of our equipment is DC powered, so we have to take the AC. Mm-hmm. It's provided by whatever power company we use, and we have to convert that to DC to power the equipment because it's more stable energy characteristics. DC to vacillate the equipment and it could cause issues with the equipment. So usually within the cabinet is a converter. Within the converter, we have our breakers. So, and again, to go back to the safety issue, our equipment is manned 24 hours a day through the knock. If something were to happen, the alarm comes back immediately. Immediately, if the equipment is damaged, immediately, if the equipment just goes down through failure of the equipment, and then someone is deployed. So, and there are, for the most part, we usually have a very small sort of inobtrusive sticker that has our 800 number on there, which goes directly to the knock. So if you guys were needing assistance, that number would be made available. So
you could remotely de-energize it if need be?
Yes.
Okay.
We have the capability to log into any one of our sites. I mean, it might be a little more difficult if something's damaged. You know, we might have to get
right.
somebody out here physically to...
I'm thinking his instance, like, we have a car on it and it's hot, we can just call your number, make sure that this box is down.
Yeah, those, it's usually like a little emergency sticker.
Right.
It says in the case of emergency, it gives you the number for our network operations center.
Cool. Thank you.
Just on that, the diagram shows a meter on each one of these. Is this like a standard meter that can be disconnected? I know it doesn't take the power in front of the meter, but it deactivates everything behind that?
I'm not your electrical expert. I don't really know that.
Because I assume that's the sort of thing you're familiar with.
Yeah, because it's a meter. It shows a meter.
I just don't know if it's a standard meter.
Pull the,
yeah.
pull the head.
Yeah.
I was just saying, if there's a meter fan, you
yeah.
could actually crack that seal and pull that meter out. You could kill that power. That's what you're basically asking.
He is the electrical
expert. Yeah. If there was a meter pan, you couldn't.
And that's why I'm just wondering if the little sketch looks like a standard, you know, glass meter, but I don't know if it's
that'll be, you get
if in fact that is
one.
About.
It's
you
like
that
no.
special
no.
to,
yes.
yeah. to get into
yeah.
that box.
Yeah. Okay.
Greg, why don't I suggest this? Why don't you get something drafted up, send it up to me based on what the governing body has,
sure.
and we'll take a look at it and then consider it at your next meeting, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. I think you got enough.
Yep. Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right, where are we at? Catherine, you can give Greg my email address, et cetera. I'll give you my card.
Well,
why do I not have this?
The Green Acres app?
You want 1 minute on that?
Yeah.
Just to
okay, because I don't have it. I don't seem to have it here. So
well, there's no. It was just an up. It was just, there's nothing.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, I'm like
yeah,
I have
yeah.
some piece of paper to go with every ABC. Okay. So yeah, then Mike to go over the Green Acres application.
Okay. Just for everyone's information.
Hold on, bang the
gavel. Let them pack up and get out.
Bring them back in. Reel them in.
That's a great question about the shot clock.
Oh, right.
I was going to ask it, and I didn't have it underlined, so
yeah.
I missed it.
I almost missed it, too.
And I'm thinking, we don't want that.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Nice meeting you.
Up is special at the UPS store.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we don't have color copy, but it's on paper.
You could continue that outside, Lori, if you wanted. Guess not.
Take the gavel.
I've never used the gavel.
Go ahead, whack
do
it,
it
once.
Get aggressive.
You'll feel good.
You'll feel good when you do it.
All right, thank you. Let's go, Mike.
Okay.
Okay, next item is Green Acres application, an update by Mike.
Okay, update on that. As you know, we applied in February for the next round of the Green Acres Open Space, the so-called Planning Incentive Grant. The good news is that our application has been deemed complete with one deliverable, which is that our Open Space and Recreation Plan an element of our master plan dates from 2002, and they've asked us to go through a update procedure by the end of the year. So this will entail some cost, but it's probably needed in any case. And so it's, I don't know if we need a motion or not to send this to the planning board, but...
I think it'd probably best to have a motion to send it down to the planning board so they can have official, it's coming from us officially to review it.
Okay.
So
I'll make a motion that we inform the planning board or request the planning board to update our open space recreation plan, ideally by the end of the year, in conformance with the Green Acres application.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Thank you. Okay, then we have the update in the paperwork for the museum addition bid. If there's any thoughts and questions on this, as people got to read the...
Yeah, the only question I had was, is the septic part of this or not?
No.
So, in other words, once the septic is going to go in first, I guess, and then 90 days after that, or...
No. This contract goes out first, and once this contract is in motion, we'll then give a bid out for the... we'll accept a proposal for the septic. The septic right. should
okay.
be under the bid...
Thresholds.
Threshold.
Yeah.
But I guess, as... Dick, I assume Tara has completely updated you on this. The question, the key question for the committee is, when Tara prepared this bid spec, this is for our museum addition,
correct?
A question I asked her was, what number of these requirements are required by state law, and what additional protections she might have put in here for the township?
Right.
And as I understood, part of her answer was that for a project with a value of over $100,000, a performance bond is mandatory.
Correct.
Under $100,000, the committee can decide if we want a performance bond.
Correct.
And as I discussed with her and with the architect, the question was whether we could protect the township by using a payment schedule rather than a performance bond. And I have two reasons that I'm asking that question. One is a performance bond significantly increases the cost to the bidder. It's a material cost. Maybe even 10% of the total cost the contractor would have to charge to put a performance bond in place, keeping in mind it's a very small project, relatively small for the relative to the 100,000 threshold.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, as I've talked around, a lot of contractors that would put on a small addition of this scale oftentimes don't have themselves legally set up in an entity that can pledge equity toward a project. And so that's why I raised the question of the performance bond is meant to protect the township, that we retain a contractor starts the work, goes bust, leaves, and we're left holding the bag after we've paid some and now we've got costs.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a well-monitored payment scheme to this contractor, for example, we pay 15% when the footings and excavation are done.
Mm-hmm.
We pay another 15% when the masonry walls are up. You know, we work it out with the expert to know where we are. We get building official approvals. We would know our exposure that if the contractor left midway through, we wouldn't have paid for work that hasn't been done. Work that's done has been inspected and approved. We've paid for. Is that something that we could put into this contract proposal, this bid proposal, rather than a performance bond and protect the township?
You can do that. I would prefer to see you get a performance bond. How much do you anticipate that this will cost, this project? What's the estimate?
The architect says he's notoriously bad at estimating, but in our minutes over the past year, we were thinking $65,000 to $75,000 to put on an addition.
The performance bond does two things. It protects the town, but it also protects any subs on the job. Now, I discussed that with Tara, and she said she didn't think there'd be a lot of subs on the job. But there is a thing called a mechanics lien that's available for subs on the job. And the performance bond contains provisions where it guarantees that the subs will be paid. So that's always a concern, because if for some reason your contractor isn't paying his subs,
there's going to be a lien on whatever is the balance due on the contract. Now, that may not affect you, but we've had some past problems with that. A suggestion for you, simply because from a lawyer's standpoint, the more conservative thing for me to do is to tell you to try to consider getting a performance bond, but it's a business decision from your standpoint, okay? Mm-hmm. What would you consider an alternate with a performance bond and another price without a performance bond? And then you could sort of look at the exact cost of the performance bond, and if they can't get one, they just put in there, can't get a performance bond. So at least you'd know on the bids, you could price the risk you're taking by not getting a performance bond.
I'm only hesitating because I asked Tara that exact question, and I didn't get an answer that said, yes, possible. I asked if we could make a performance bond
optional.
Well,
I'm saying you can make it optional under 100,
yep.
And then your bid would also ask for alternate proposals.
Yep.
An alternate proposal is with a performance bond and without a performance bond. So that if it's 10% of 65 and the performance bond is going to cost the contractor $6,500,
yep.
Then you know for sure that you're saving $6,500 if you take the risk of not having a performance bond. So it monetizes the risk from your business standpoint.
Yep. And I like that idea.
Yeah.
The question
I have a feeling you might. That's a Mike type of response. I'm learning from Mike in terms of that Lazard Frere training.
Can the bid award, is the base bid then without the performance bond, and we can evaluate all the bids?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. I hadn't thought about it, whether it's the base or or you could
subtract. Because it would have to,
but I think you're right. The base bid would be without the performance bond, and then with a performance bond, it's X. So then
and then we still have a payment schedule.
Oh yeah, you normally have a payment schedule in any case because you normally don't pay until certain work is done.
Right.
My recollection, and I asked Tara about this, but we weren't able to actually confirm it. And I don't know whether it's over $100,000 that this comes into play or all construction contracts. But there's the Contractors Association got a deal that said you can only withhold 5%. Toward the end, okay, it used to be 10%, everybody withhold. So I think you're going to be narrowed a little bit in that regard. But, we're not, if the architect is on top of this and you get a decent contractor, I think it can be monitored and can work itself out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a contractor, but I was thinking if you had a situation where somebody walked away partway through and somebody new came in to finish it, would they feel good guaranteeing what was done before them and putting stuff on top of that?
I don't think they would.
That's the thing that,
What I think would happen if you got a new contractor coming in, he or she would give you a new price.
That's what I'm...
It would, based on what they thought to finish the project.
Okay. So I like the idea of the base bid without a performance bond. And... some wording that says a performance bond may be looked at favorably or something.
I think you could almost say the town would prefer to have a performance bond, but we want to know what the additional cost would be, and can you get one?
Mm-hmm. So then we wouldn't exclude contractors who aren't set up to do it.
No.
Okay. That was my question, whether we could protect ourselves.
Yeah, Tara was talking to me about the suggestions you had with respect to a warranty, the contractor giving you a warranty. But the problem is it's only as good as the contractor.
And that came because the architect put a warranty in his drawings, a warranty request in the drawings. And so that was another topic for the committee to decide whether we want the warranty or not.
When's this going out to bid?
That's one of our other questions, but imminently. As soon as we can get this nailed down and get it out advertised.
Right. And, at that point, do we ask for the schedule of values as part of the bid package, or it has to be provided within X amount of period of time on approval?
What values?
The schedule of values.
Tara said that that's usually in the contract, not in the bid.
Not in the bid, okay.
I think that the contractor would like to know how much he's being paid
Well, I would like to have him put to us what he feels the schedule values are initially. I mean, we would,
when you
know,
say
on our
value,
end.
You're talking about the payment schedule?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excavation so much.
Yeah.
Normally, it's you, the architect would tell you, because the architect's going to pretty much know, all right, is the masonry 10% of the job or 15% of the
no,
job? That would be the normal way, but I think that's up to the architect in
yeah.
terms of
I mean,
that.
A lot of times I've seen it in contracts, and I don't know if this is not considered the contract then. You know, that we're going to then have another document that's going to be the contract we're going to send once we approve the bid. Is that
you could do it one of two ways, and I think I recall Tara and Mike refresh my recollection of saying that the architect actually wanted it in the contract. We normally do it. If we say this is a road contract or something, the engineer would have all of that right in the specifications, and then the contract would be a very short document that says you're going to agree to do what's in the specifications. Now, the architect here has a slightly different way of doing it, and you know, we could work with whatever way he wants to do it, but he apparently wanted some additional information actually in the contract. But normally what you would do as part of the bid specs, you provide the contract. So the contractor knows exactly what the contract
right,
that's signed is.
That's why I was wanting to see if that have them provide that schedule of values going, you know, it's whatever, 5% is mobilization, 10% is the, you know, shop designs.
The problem with that, though, I think, Mark, is how do you compare that? If you have the if I understand what you're saying the contractor would say, I want to be paid 5% here and I want to be
well, he's going to submit with his AIA billing that he's, you know, he's done 50% of his mobilization, so that's, and he already determined that 5% of the costs is mobilization, and then he's, and electrical is 10% of the costs, and he's going to submit that 25% of the electrical is done.
Don't
so,
you have a problem comparing apples to apples then? In other words,
I'm not, I don't care contractor to contractor. At the end of the day, so we know what we're paying. So when we go to inspect, or whoever goes to inspect, and say, yes, 25% of this electrical is done, we can approve his invoice to say he did 25% of the electrical.
Right. There's normally under the AIA contractors, like a contractor's architect certification. And the architect says, okay, contract says, you know, at this stage when the masonry is done,
right,
25% is paid, or whatever the percentage is. Right. Normally, the architect would establish that.
Okay.
And the reason, I would say, again,
I'll be honest with you, I have yet to see that on our end of it. With the contractor, we always give it to them, and they say yes or no.
Yeah. Well, in a public bid, we got to compare apples to apples. So if contractor A says, well, I'm going to pay you 25% at the end of the masonry, contractor B says, well, I want 30% at the end of the masonry. How do you compare those two?
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Like, I literally have five contracts with the state right now that I'm telling them what my schedule of values are.
Okay.
And that's why I'm saying, like, I'm telling them of this amount, 10% is this, 20% is that, you know, and that's why because at the end of the day, they just want to say, okay, that's what you say it's worth, this is what it is, and they'll come back and say, the GC will come back and say, I think it's less than that or not, but we're giving them what we feel it is.
I see what you're saying. I haven't ever seen it done that way, but
I think it's become the lazy way to do it. Put the labor on the contractor, and then they have last rate of refusal.
So let me just,
because they're still
going to
pay what they want.
Doesn't that, and again, you know, would that allow the contractor, though, to
front load
the beginning?
Yep.
And if you don't have a performance bond.
Well, yeah. If you don't have a performance bond and you see it's front loaded, but then
so
that's where they come back to you and say that what they want, and then you could say no, this is not what we want. But let them put their schedule of values to it, and then you can adjust it back in the contract and say no, we feel, you know, whatever excavating is only 10%, and you know, but that's.
I mean, again, it's something I think we could talk through, but. If that's the case, and contractor A gives a particular proposal and contractor B gives a different proposal, and then you decide after the bids are in what the payment schedule is, if you're the contractor who didn't come up with the payment schedule that was the one that was agreed to, but you were counting that your bid would be paid in a certain time, could you feel that you got shortchanged in some way? I mean, we always worry about in these things that some and it's not going to happen in this case because the numbers are too slow, too low to.
Yeah.
But well, that's what I would be worried about, where a contractor comes back and says, "Well, it was an unfair bidding because I ended up."
I mean, if the architect is capable of putting a schedule of values to it, then fine, and we can live with that. You know, and then it would become part of the contract and.
Yeah, and I don't think we're talking about. You know, anything
that we
really
can live with.
Here, right?
No,
we're
I mean,
talking about the masonry.
You got masonry framing, electrical, and sheetrock.
What do you think? I mean, you're a contractor. You know this stuff. I mean,
I think I'd rather see it all in the contract by our architect to lay it out so that it's evenly bidded. So when everyone comes in here, this is what I'm getting paid for this piece of operation. This is what I'm getting paid for that.
Yeah.
I would prefer to see it that way.
I think on a more sophisticated level, Mark, that you might be operating on, that would. You know, certainly be where you got more sophisticated parties, but I think at this level,
yeah, I have no problem. You know, whichever way, as long as it's in the contract, so it's clear,
right.
One way or the other, that somewhere
clear
there's a schedule of values.
Everyone sees the same values.
Yeah. You know, as long as there's a schedule of values that we know we're paying towards, and it's in the language somewhere, either in the contract or the bid.
I agree, it has to be in there.
Okay.
So,
my sense is those two items are a big enough rework.
Those, and then I also was the 90-day limitation that we had in there, which really works out to only be like 60 days.
But my point is, in terms of where we're going right now, we either approve this with changes or we redraft and come back April 19th. I'm suspecting we come back April 19th. Okay. So now to your question.
Mark, what was the 90-day?
I lost the page. Where the... The contractor has to start work within 30 days, and then they have to be complete within 90 days.
Got it.
But it was changed from like 14 days to 30 days, but that 30 days, the way the wording is, they have to be done within 90 days of notice, which is actually only 60 days potentially.
I see. That's good, sensible thing. Yeah. So how long do you want
to get that done is not a 60, it's a more than a 60-day project with weather and things. Yeah, I think 100 minimum. I think would be 120. Weather can be a bear depending.
Well,
on...
Why here 150?
I don't want it to run on forever. I also don't want. I don't want to.
4 months.
Yeah, I think 4 months.
But it's 120 is really 9 months. Really 3 months. It's really 90. Because the first, they're given notice. Then they have 30 days to start the project, and that 30 days is part of the completion time.
Okay, so
that's why we're at 150.
100 what?
150 is net.
120
of construction time. I mean, is that you think that's? I mean, you do more of the general construction. That's. I mean, is that a reasonable time frame? If you got that job,
it's more than reasonable.
I mean, with weather and other, I don't want to be obviously on the other. This is too much time, but I also don't want to put the time on that to scare somebody away, saying I can't get that done in that amount of time.
Okay.
You know, that's my point. Is I don't want to scare a contractor that says, "Hey, I only, I'm a smaller guy, but I can do it." But
being that the 30 days is lost, that gives them 120 days of construction. I think 150 days would be appropriate.
Okay.
And I don't have a perfect understanding of what this is, but usually in an AIA contract, there's a provision in there that says, "Look, if you get a hurricane or earthquakes or, you get additional time for weather." Mm-hmm. And so I assume that we have that or we can...
Yeah, well, it's normally there, but then you have to fight it. And then you have to get certified weather reports and things like that. And I've been down that road, too.
Right.
So I'd rather try to eliminate that for something this size.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Whatever number you've...
So if we make it 150, that gives it 120 construction days.
Mm-hmm. So it's 150 days from the bid date?
From the notice date.
Okay. Notice of award, right? That's what you're saying?
Correct. And we have retained still the 30 days for to start.
Just for your notes, this is in Section 11, time limit and liquidated damages.
Okay. And Tara had a number of things that maybe we could... Assuming that you approve this on April 19th, you need to fill in the issue date, the due date for bids, the date of any pre-bid conference, and we talked about the warranty issue. And
but have we decided the warranty issue?
I don't know.
Because I think those dates we can deal with on April 19th. That's why I was wondering if we'd meet them tonight or not.
Right.
But the warranty, I think we need feedback.
I agree.
Decision by the committee whether we want to... Ask for a warranty or not, I think was Tara's question to us.
Right.
line.
So just background-wise, I think, and Mike, correct me if I misstate something that you and Tara had discussions about, but the question is, usually you get a maintenance bond, okay? And I assume that the concern is it costs money to get a maintenance bond. And I think what you're trying to do is be very efficient in terms of considering the size of the job and to make it available to as many contractors as might be available even in the local area. So the question is, normally we'd have a maintenance bond. Do you want to have a maintenance bond? The thought was, well, you can get a warranty from the person. And that's, again, a business decision as to the value that you place on that. A warranty is as good as whoever the person that gives the warranty. A maintenance bond comes from a third party that presumably has the wherewithal to make good on any failure to maintain. So that's the issue.
In the bid that Tara did, she's got performance bond and maintenance bond in the same section.
Right.
Can we make both of those alternate?
Sure. I don't see why not.
And then would we have the warranty as a base, or...
Well, the warranty, I don't see that's... I mean, the warranty basically, as I understand it, is you're asking the contractor to stand behind his work, her work.
For 1 year is what it
right.
says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Which I think is
standard.
Yeah,
and I don't see that as an expensive item, right? I mean, what kind of contractor would you want that didn't?
It was on Tara's list. That's why I just wanted to...
Mm.
But I think the committee, it sounds like we think a warranty is reasonable for 1 year.
I do think so. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're going to regret this?
I'm just figuring out.
I think you're looking at Kim.
No,
to
I'm,
say
looking,
so.
I'm looking at the calendar just to kind of give an idea of when we do come back on the 19th, we approve it, what those dates would be.
So I think that's the direction we needed, unless you have any more you want to add into this.
No, I think that it needs to be rewritten and for approval on the 19th.
So
the issue date, the due date, and the date of the pre-bid conference, you'll fill in on the on April 19th?
Well, that's what I was trying to look at right now, is to just to look at it to see, have an idea of what's, so we don't, is, I mean, if we approve it on the 19th, I mean, there's really no reason why we couldn't issue it by the either the next day or the 21st, you know, 2 days later. I mean, right?
Well, sure. Does it get issued at on the day it's published in a newspaper, or does it get issued the day we post it here?
The issue date. It would be, you know, that's a good question. I think it would be the date that you actually authorize it, which I think is the date of the meeting, I think. I need to take a look at the issue date here.
Okay. So if it is takes a week to get it published in the newspaper.
Yeah.
But that's a question then.
Yeah.
If it takes a week to get it published in the newspaper, that week is part of the...
Right, so the 26th would be essentially the start of their contractor's ability to estimate it.
She has it on the front there the next day after this meeting.
Right.
So I think you'd pick the issue date would be
the 20th.
The 20th, right?
And do we want to give contractors then 3 weeks, but some contractors won't see it in the newspaper for a week?
Yeah. My view is always, I think it's a minimum of 10 days, but I think the bottom line is I've always thought it's better to give more time to give as many contractors the opportunity to come in. So that's a business call, Tom. Yeah, I mean, what do you think?
I mean, if I see some of that thing personally, I walk away from it.
If you can't.
I'm going to throw more money at it the quicker you want it.
Correct. That's what I would think, too. I think, you know, you want to get the best bids you can.
Yeah.
And I assume you'd prefer local contractors, if you could possibly get local contractors.
Yeah, if I had more time,
maybe from Lebanon,
do a more accurate bid.
So what's a reasonable time? I mean, I don't.
Because that's what I'm saying. Because I was looking at it where it would be. That would mean realistically like the 10th.
May 10th?
Yeah, it would be the 3 week period.
Well, let's see, you got two meetings in May, right?
Right. We'd miss the third because
the
it would
first
be
or the second meeting in May, if that's enough time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If we had the bids come back on the 10th, but then you'd have the bid opening wouldn't necessarily be a committee meeting. It could be another meeting. So then we could then on the 17th would be the committee meeting that we could then issue the contract.
You need
I mean, you need the architect to look through the bids, right? And probably our office has to look through to make sure that they comply.
Right.
So that takes a certain amount of time, but not a huge amount of time. So, you know.
So like I said, so is that, I mean, is it the 9th or 10th? And then that would be, because the 17th would be the committee meeting where we'd like to make that announcement as to who got it. Is that reasonable amount of time?
Yeah, sure. That's right. We can do our review.
Week between the opening.
In a day or two.
Okay.
Yeah, especially in a small project like this, it takes a little
time. So the 10th for an opening, the bid opening, and then the 17th would be when we would be issuing. Does that seem realistic then?
How about a date for a pre-bid conference?
What is that with
the architect. Yeah. We invite any bidder who wants to come to the museum.
Like a walkthrough.
Yeah. So you should push it out, I think, a little bit.
And by the way, this does contemplate by appointment that bidders could come and see the museum. They can contact the clerk to make an appointment, but there'd be no professional there to give them any guidance on it, but if they want to see what the walls look like and things.
Well, I mean, typically, I mean, if we're making it then, it would be announced, it would be in the paper on, like, by the 26th. Mm-hmm. Then the 2nd, we could do the walkthrough. That gives a couple days for people to decide if they want to do it. It still then gives you enough, it gives you a little more than, it gives you about a week then to do finalize, because it gives them time to look at the drawings, come up with their request for information.
You happen to pick a Tuesday. I checked with the architect, his general availability.
It's not Tuesday.
First thing in the morning, except Tuesday.
Tom, do you think from your professional standpoint that the time period is enough?
Hmm?
Do you think the time period is enough? I mean,
yeah.
To give contractors?
Okay. I do.
Is May 3rd then?
Wednesday,
is that a decent day for bid conference?
Like any day you want.
Yeah, I mean, that still then gives another week before the bids have to be in. It gives realistically the person, a company, about a week to have the drawings, to review the drawings, put together, start their bids, and then come up with their questions that hopefully the walkthrough will answer, and then another week to finalize the estimate. I don't think, you know, we're not talking a huge job, so.
One thing again, if you know, big contractors, you guys would have a professional organization. You know, get the insurance, get all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Would if somebody who's a little smaller, a contractor, would they?
Would have to have workman's comp and general liability.
Right. They're going to have to go to their agent, make sure they get their certificates for
exactly.
The bid specs.
Yes.
And then they're going to have to explore the performance versus the non-performance. And then they're going to have to explore the maintenance versus the
You're saying is you think we're cutting it a little short.
And won't they have
Maury, I don't want you to beating me up when I right? I know. Yeah. I'm running out of the door, right? Chief, you hear that? Look out for me.
Won't they have to interact with subcontractors
they will.
As well?
Well, the problem is then it adds three more weeks.
I hear you, Mark.
You know,
I'm trying to.
You know, that's the problem is because we add another week, then it puts us to the 17th. Which is our meeting, which then is another 3 weeks before we would actually make the approval.
Well, again, I got Maury hating me. You're going to hate me. You're going to have a special meeting.
There we go.
Right? So, everybody, going to hate me.
A May 31st special meeting.
That's not logical.
It's tight.
I don't know.
You know.
Still doable.
Maury, the only thing
doable.
I would say.
I don't think it's too much. I don't think it's. I think it's enough time. I mean, it's realistically, I think, for the size of the job, I think it's enough time.
What is the job? What do you...
Build an addition.
We're putting a room on the back of the museum, which will add a subterranean basement with a room above it, which will be on level with the main floor, and that will have a handicap accessible bathroom and a little storage area and a counter with an A roof. A relatively simple construction.
Stucco on the outside.
So
it's 120 square feet. And I know it's a small job, but it still has all the trades.
Yeah.
It's going to have an excavator. It's going to have a mason. It's going to have the stucco people. It's going to have a roofer. It's going to have electrician. It's going to have a
plumbing. Mechanical room would be underneath in the basement, accessible with an exterior door from the outside. It's on the back of the building.
I rely on
closer
people
to
do
the
it
Hampton side of the building.
I mean, I get an email with the drawings, and
we've used a window
late, you
to
print it out.
Go through instead of open up the stone. We use an existing window to go through it.
You know, I don't think actually, Mark, that the difficulty of construction is going to be a challenge to any contractors that are competent. I think it's fulfilling the obligations of a fairly significant contract.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you do it every day, you know, like we do work for the state of New Jersey, and they come out with these big, long, you know, right. forms, but we do them all the time.
But I'm not required to give DMPC and all those other stuff until I get the contract.
Yeah.
You know, I get the contract, then I have to prove my certificate of insurance, then I have to prove my, you know, as long as I know I can call my, I can get this, I can get a whatever, an $80,000 bond, okay, good, this is my value. I'm not asking for it to run the paperwork. That's what that 30-day, you know, we originally had 14 days, that's what the 30 days is given to them, that contractor, to get all that stuff and get together and get, you know, this is really the estimate side of things, you know. That's the way I've, you know.
I don't know.
You're not going to go through the hoops of getting all that paperwork in place if you don't get the job.
I agree.
But as long as you know you can do it and you can meet the criteria, and that's what you have that window for to get it.
They have to have a business
a tax ID and everything like that. I mean, that's understandable. If they don't have that, then they shouldn't even be paying anything.
But they, you know, they have to come up with a surety bond. Which I know is
that's
easy, but they
have
to have enough. They have to have enough confidence to do it. I'm just
Mark,
looking.
We know you
could
do this in your sleep.
No, but electrically, control wise, and mechanically, fine. No, but I'm just saying, it's like it's not a big deal. And if it's somebody's doing this, you know, Charlie can contest. It's not. You take an estimate off. You do it. You're not going to go through the hoops until you get the contract. Say, yeah, okay, I want it. Okay, now I'll get you all the paperwork.
Well, there's going to be certain required paperwork that they have to have, the business registration certificate.
Yeah, but they would have that anyway. That's for anything. They're going to have a business ID. They're going to have a tax ID. They're going to have a registered business. They're going to have, you know, a CIO.
I'm only
And so, I mean, there's all these things that they're going to already have. I don't think it's. I don't think that the time frame, you know, is unreasonable. And I mean, if nobody comes back with a bid, then nobody comes back with a bid. But I would be surprised. Unless, I mean, like I said, if we want to extend it, the problem is if we extend it, it just makes it. Then we would be looking at, we wouldn't be making an approval until June unless we made a special meeting to do it. And then, so June. You know, they'd be finishing. No, they'd still be finishing in October, theoretically. I don't know. I mean, no.
Mike?
I've never prepared bids. I have no basis. I'm just asking the question and looking for
guidance. Tom, you've worked in this, I would say, more in that size of arena.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it...
I think what's going to scare them off is that bid package.
Mm-hmm. Well,
this bid package.
Well, that's my concern.
For the type of contractor that you're going to run into.
Yeah. I don't want a Turner.
You're not going to get a Turner.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
Just not going to happen.
Yeah, but that's what it is expecting, that kind of bid package. Is that, you know, that's, but I want. That's my concern, too, is I want somebody that's...
To Dick's question, maybe we should allot a little more time.
Okay.
I know it puts us deeper into the summer, but we're still coming out somewhere in October. The weather's still, I think, looking good. And it gives a little bit more time to get some of these smaller groups to maybe get some interest in it.
Were you talking about putting out for bid longer?
Another week.
Were you talking about putting out for bid longer?
Yeah. Another week, yeah.
And a week in the whole process. Okay. So that gives us, what, 120 to 157 days?
Right? Yeah, I mean, realistically,
so that's all I'm talking about.
Now, can you pick the bid and approve it on the same, open the bids the same meeting night as a meeting, or do you have to have a separate meeting?
Well, that I think if I'm understanding, that's Mark's point. We go into a special meeting, or we got to wait till June, right, Mark?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, realistically, then if we said 17,
clerk open the bids. Huh? Yeah, we have a bids presenter to the clerk, and she can open the bids.
Right.
It's a public process.
Well, because, so, I mean, so the bid, she would open them, and if we said, like, the 17th or the 18th, at that point, they would be opened. Yeah. Then they got to go to you, go to the architect.
Mm-hmm. Let's rearrange those dates.
Huh?
Let's push those dates a little bit.
So,
in other words,
we said due date of May 10th. You're originally due date of May 17th.
Okay.
That would add another week. I mean,
okay, and everything else falls into place.
He's the mayor.
Is that what you're saying? Before they can make an award bid, don't they have to have the CFO's certification as well? So you have to time it down, huh?
That's
just to certify funds.
Yeah.
That's, you know, presumably you have the funds, right?
But it always has to say the amount of the bid.
Right, but she just gives a certification, says, you know, funds are certified. I don't think, I don't anticipate that as a problem.
Someone put the dates together here. Yeah.
So if the bids are due on the 17th,
yes,
we were allowing 1 week for architect review, your review, etc. Mm-hmm. So that would mean that we could have a special meeting on the 24th.
Well, the 24th is zoning board, so we can make a special meeting on the 25th.
Yeah, exactly. We can do it on the 25th. Okay.
On the 25th, that's when you're going to approve the bid?
To award the bid.
To award.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this is all tentative. I mean,
this is
this will be approved on the 19th of April. So
this is all your April 25th special meeting.
And the
May 25th.
Well, May 25th.
May 25th will be the special meeting for approvals.
That's Thursday before Memorial Day weekend.
Okay.
And the pre-conference bid, then, would you have that still a little earlier or a little later in that period?
Well, then we could do it. I mean, we could do it then Thursday.
May 4th?
I mean, you don't need it that early. I mean, you don't need it that late because you want time to actually then go and then estimate. If you're going to give them that week, you might as well give them that week after the walkthrough.
Yeah. How was the walkthrough?
Huh?
When is the walkthrough?
That's where we were going to be at the third, but now, I mean, unless we could move it to like the 8th, the Monday, and that would still give them a week and a half after the walkthrough. Tom?
What's that?
Thoughts?
Would it be better to have the pre-conference earlier or later?
Because we said originally the walkthrough would be the third. And now, if we've given them another week, do we want to push that to the 8th?
If the bid is due on the 17th.
To give more time for somebody to see it, if that's what
we're
looking at.
You can always call up and go look.
On the 8th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's awful close. It's all jammed up together.
Well, I mean... What...
I'm good.
Give me your opinion. What you want? You know.
The bid gets advertised starting the 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives the 8th gives just over 2 weeks before the bid conference, and another week and a half for the bids to be
delivered.
And so that's the only question: is it better to have the bid conference a little earlier or a little, I guess, no later than the 8th?
No later. That's good.
So the 8th, okay.
Right there, the 8th.
Okay.
Oh.
The 8th target. Okay.
So let's go over the dates. The issue date will be 5/20, right? 17. And then due date
4/20.
4/20.
I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. Thank you. And then the due date would be?
The due date will be the 17th.
5/17/17.
Yep.
And the pre-bid conference?
8/5/8/5/8, and we would target the award at a special meeting on 5/25.
Very interesting to see how this is going to work out.
Do we have to close the museum when this is all being done?
I assume so.
Monday is closed,
isn't it? No.
No, she means like during.
I'm talking about when
the
whole construction's going on.
During a good part of it.
I wish thoughts, Tom. I mean, like, it's...
No, let's get this thing rolling right here the way we're doing it right now. All right?
Okay.
Be interested to see where we go with this thing.
Maybe nobody wants to do it and Lori doesn't get her bathroom.
All right.
Yeah, that's right, the assistant. Joan goes home.
Okay, so that's we're good there at that point. We know what we need to revise. We know the dates, so we'll have that on the 19th to approve.
On the 25th, you're going to open the bids? Is that what you're doing?
Target to award the bids, but we got a long agenda.
Yeah, we got a lot more to go through. the fire chief's vehicle bid. Another bid. I don't know if there's anything else that we... this is basically what we went through. James reviewed it. We're good on that end of it. This is really just accessories, right, Jim?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the vehicle anymore. This is just the accessory bit for all the lights, cameras, action kind of stuff.
Do we own the chassis at this point?
Karen would be the better person to answer that. I know they sent us some requests for some information.
Okay.
I know we'll probably be within 2 weeks, maybe a bit.
I think following Mark's point, I think the title of this, right now it says it's a bid for a 2016 or newer Chevy Tahoe. It's really for modifications to a...
Yeah, that's right, that's... Yeah,
and
Chevy
those
Tahoe.
Modifications are in this 50 pages somewhere?
No, they're attached... Well, they might be in that. They're at the very end of that 50 pages.
Yeah, you go through the legalese.
The last four pages.
And then you have the last paragraph of stuff. No.
And that's something we had reviewed prior, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Then what we read, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
It does seem like when you first look at it that we're going for a new...
Right. No.
That's
no,
that, let's change the title.
It does.
Yeah, that's why it should really be vehicle accessories and not chassis.
Do we expect one contractor performs all this work, or will it be one contractor with different subcontractors?
This would be, with the exception of the radios, everything would be done with one contractor. The only reason the radios had to be done would have to be done under my assumption is this that requires a whole different level of training as far as FCC requirements.
And do we expect this to be above the bid threshold? That's why we're not going to a state contract or someone else?
The original prices we had gotten back when the whole process started, I believe, was like $20,000 to $25,000, if I remember correctly.
And there's no state contract or this kind of modification?
For all of them in one shot, it's like a little piece here, piece there. That's the problem.
And that's why we expect a bidder to be able to do it all, but a state contract... doesn't exist to do it all.
Correct.
Okay.
This kind of, well, it makes it complicated, also simplifies it.
So the proper title should be modification to a 2016 or newer Chevrolet Tahoe?
Yeah.
Even what they customer supplied? Tahoe. I mean, that's further in this. You find out that we are supplying them the
Tahoe. So why would we say a 2016 or newer Tahoe?
That's my question.
Yeah. So wouldn't it be a 2016 Tahoe?
I believe so.
Or is it already a 17? I don't know.
Or is it already a 17?
I think it might be already a 17.
That's what I thought I heard.
What is that?
We think it's a 2017 Tahoe.
So it's modifications to a 2017 Chevrolet Tahoe four-wheel drive vehicle chassis.
Right? Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Modification to accessories, yeah. An accessory, I would
that's
say.
Right. An accessory, yeah.
Okay.
Totally right.
And we should change the date, April 2017.
So does this require the same process we just went through? This torture?
Oh, man.
Just before
who's
we
gonna,
dive into
I don't
that,
know, who's going to distribute the bid specs? I mean, how you're going to publish them? How you going to do that, Chief?
That would
Ah, okay.
I didn't know if that was Karen that advertised it and distributed it, or...
Well, she would normally advertise it, but I guess the question is, where are you going to advertise it, and who do you want it circulated to? Do you have, like, a
list of people that would be qualified?
Correct.
For their own businesses. I could provide a list, yes.
Yeah, so I think you should send that to Karen so that Karen can send it out. You want as broad a send out as possible so that everybody who's out there who might have the qualifications to do it gets the opportunity to consider where they want to bid.
Okay.
And is there a particular publication that she should put it in?
I don't.
You know, for construction contracts, there's the Blue Book or something like that, right? There's some publication that they put it in. Is there some magazine or whatever that is?
Nothing that I believe something like that would be accepted into.
Okay.
And there's quite a delay. I mean, there's certainly trade magazines, but there's delays in between requesting to have something published in it.
Got it. Yep.
And if the little bidders know what they need, you just drive it down and pick it up.
There we go.
So then I guess we could approve it with noting the change.
So what we'll do tomorrow or whatever, we'll change if you want, or I don't know if Karen can do it, if she has a new word, but we can do it. There's no problem. Send it up, and then Karen and the chief will work out the distribution of it.
Yeah. I mean, when's Karen back?
Monday.
Does this need a detailed discussion of timing, or is this, because these are commercial businesses, they'll see this and within the minimum time, within 10 days, they'd be able to turn that bid around, I assume?
Well, let's see.
Or how do you want to measure it here? And I assume, like my question last time, Dick, this bid package is basically all mandated by state law?
Yeah.
We're not doing anything unusual.
No, there's nothing unusual in this thing. Okay, so sealed bids will be received by the designated representative at 11 a.m. on the date of the notice to bidders below. So you got to pick the date that you want the bids returnable by. So when do you want the bids returnable?
Which is my question in terms of, is 2 weeks after bid publication? Or
is reasonable for this kind of...
Or
Chief, any idea how long that...
I would assume that would be reasonable. I mean, we're not...
It's
expensive, but it's not that much work on vehicles.
Right.
And it's standard stuff. A contractor who knows how to do this
should know how much it costs.
Yeah. The time that it would take to do it.
Yeah.
Again, the only question I say is that, you know, the longer you give people, like Mark said, it's too short a window. It just throws it in the garbage or puts it really.
But I mean, think 2 weeks for something like this is they look down the list and they check off the checklist and go, I got one of these, I got two of those, I got. This is there's less estimation.
Sure.
As long as we're not putting it out Easter week or something. Watch that.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, if we essentially put it out the 10th, so we did the 10th or the 11th, and you know, not bombard Karen on the day she actually gets back.
But there's a holiday in there on the 14th is a Good Friday holiday.
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, I mean, we wanted to say that, and then you have Easter. Have to come back. But is this the same thing you go through at review?
Yeah, I guess we could. This is not a particularly complicated bit. I think the important part is the looking at the technical side of this thing. That's, you know, we can't do that, so... You know, the chief and his people have to do that.
I'm just saying, so if we could have it available so that we could approve the bidder on the 3rd of May is what I'm getting at, is the timing.
So bids to be awarded May, what was it?
May 3rd would be, you know, to award the bid.
5/3/17, okay. And so we'll have the bid specifications available starting Monday? Is that
even
tonight?
That Karen's not back till Monday?
Correct.
So do you want to?
Do you have this cover letter and everything like that to edit it? So it's clean?
Oh yeah, it's
okay. So then you can edit that clean and then have it for Karen to have.
Yep.
And there's nothing that she really has to do. Yep. It's just to have it and then.
Public
publication.
Publication, that end. But and then she can handle the publication. If that, then it's available for publication, and then Jimmy could have a copy of it or no.
Publication won't happen until the 19th. Oh,
wait, what?
Maybe the 12th. I don't know what the deadline is for getting it in.
Kim, where are you going to publish it?
Typically, we do the review.
Okay. Okay.
By noontime.
Reviews put together, that's right, on Mondays. Monday morning, yeah.
Okay, so if it's all there ready for her ahead of that, and then obviously if it's electronic format that then Jimmy can also have the send out to anybody you do know that would be interested in it, you know, to notify them.
And so what date did you want the bids received by?
Well, if the 3rd we want to approve it, is the 26th reasonable then to have it come back here, be opened on the 26th, and then that gives you at least the Monday, at least, you know, gives you one Monday before for your guys to at least look at it and then give a, you know, yay or nay on contractors before the Wednesday meeting. And we'll have it on the agenda for, you know, awards, and hopefully you can come to put in your 2 cents.
So we would say the bids will be available Tuesday. Is that to give Karen, you know, just a little bit of time?
Yeah, we'll looking at having it in the paper on the 10th in the morning to put it there, but then they would be...
For the 12th.
Yeah.
For publication.
For publication. But... Yeah.
All right. So if they're available the 11th.
They're available, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then they'll be opened on the 26th. That'll give some time in there with the holidays. Okay. So can I get a motion to approve this with the changes, the title changes made for going out... sent to the paper on the 10th for notification on the 12th, being available on the 11th, opened on the 26th, and approved on May 3rd. Does that work?
I'll make
you repeat it.
I was going to say, I'm not going to make that. I'll second that.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. One thing done. Accomplishment. The lease agreement for the Station 3. You guys, Jimmy, did you go through that? Did you guys review it? Any other?
We reviewed it. It was satisfactory. But the one question I had, and after a couple of weeks of thinking about it, under it says that any town functions will be able to rent it for free. After speaking to the guy that's going to kind of handle our whole rental, we're fine with that, but we'd like to have a separate rental agreement then for to cover the, if, let's say, the historian's running and somebody breaks a door or something like that. Ordinarily, we would have a deposit, a security to hold over somebody.
Well, does not cross the top.
Not as a wear and tear item. You know, I mean, if the door was open, it fell off the hinges.
Right.
But
I believe we had, you know, there's the I understand what you're saying. But if it's
a
town committee, then we're responsible.
Agreement for town functions at no charge, just saying that if something was broken or damaged out of misconduct, that we're ordinarily responsible for replacing or repairing.
Okay. I was just saying. So, like, if normally if somebody kicked out the lights, you guys would handle repairing the lights out of the money and the deposit or whatever that you received. And if it was a case where, you know,
we're not working on the deposit or rental period,
the historians like got rowdy and kicked out the lights, then
not that we think it would happen.
then the township would be responsible to reimburse you for that value. I understand that. Then I think that we could just add another agreement, or should we Or would that be a line item to the lease? How would we handle
well,
that?
Well, I'm looking at the definitions right now, and under the Section 8, there's tenants, maintenance, and repairs. That's pretty much normal maintenance items, which I think the chief is excluding. And it said, for landlord repairs and maintenance, landlord shall maintain and make any necessary repairs and replacements to the following vital facilities, such as heating, plumbing, electrical systems, exterior of property, such as windows, doors, roof, siding. So you're talking about something that would be inside
that
would be...
Ordinarily, the fire department would be responsible for maintaining and repairing.
So they broke the faucet, you know, they ripped the faucet off or something, or some kind of damage.
Well, let me. Maybe the easiest way to do this, so you get these two things passed and agreed to and in place, and then we could do a little, like, side agreement that says, all right, if the historians are going to use it, and it's approved by the township committee, I assume, then the township would be responsible, and we could create a little side agreement without having to try to amend this thing
amend
again.
Yeah. Well, that's my guess. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So then we could cover, get the lease out of the way, we could get the hall, the general hall agreement rental out of the way, and then we can come back to your concern, and we can come up with what would be an in-house agreement.
Since you're on a roll tonight, Mayor, we want to continue that along here, See, we're making progress.
Who's allowed to use it free of charge?
Township groups.
So, like, the rec committee, the historical committee, as was my understanding.
Park, if you wanted to guys have your
something
year-end
damaged
banquet or whatever there for your group.
We'll have a little addendum.
I mean, I think it's even broader than that, though, because as it's printed here, Dick, tell me if I'm wrong, it says groups or committees from the township or surrounding areas where the organization, group, or committee provides community service to Lebanon Township or its residents. I read that to be Boy Scout groups, Girl Scout groups, community groups that have a community benefit, veterans groups, I don't know. Is that... Am I reading that broadly?
Yeah. That's what page are you looking at, Mike?
Page 3, 5B.
I didn't think so either.
I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking just within the town, the township entity. I wasn't thinking outside of the township entity.
Right.
So that'd be concerned if that.
When I read this earlier, that's what I was assuming. It was.
It's pretty broad.
It's pretty broad. Yeah.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Page 3, 5B. I mean, it's when it says or surrounding areas that it triggered me to say, oh, that's.
Well, yeah, it's so where where the organization, group, or committee
maybe
provides community
appointed groups.
Well, I mean, the question here is, do you want it just the automatic access, free access to entities affiliated with the township entity? In other words, the township government.
Well, exactly, and that's the way I envisioned it, and that's the way maybe that's what I'm. That I envisioned it, because if rec or park wants to rent it, some of those groups we're subsidizing with cost. It kind of seems it's kind of like paying tax on a state job, But I mean, if it's a veterans group, maybe they would have internally their own special costs for a veterans group. But they still have costs, to run the heat, to run all these items. So I didn't realize it could be interpreted that broadly. Yeah, and then at least if I would think then at that point that the fire department can make that determination. Whereas I know the park is done on their end of it, where somebody comes to them that's a nonprofit, you're not forced into a corner to give it. You can say, yeah, we like your cause, we're going to give you a break, or something that I'd rather see it that way, that it gives them the opportunity to have that right of refusal. and not be, because it is, you're maintaining it too, so you're somebody going there and opening it, so there's time out of your group to go and do this, so I don't want to make it a burden either. What's the best way to change that wording?
Yeah, you mean, so you want it just township entities,
yes.
Township organizations.
Yeah, so what would
don't
be...
you just strike the second half of the sentence?
That's what
from
I would...
From or onward.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Access to the township for its activities and other responsible community organizations, groups, or committee from the township, period.
The township entity?
It says community organizations. Do you want it only township organizations? In other words, how narrow do you want to have
organizations appointed by the municipality? Mm-hmm. Something like that?
Yeah.
Why don't you say to the township and its we would say agencies or other
affiliates?
Agencies, committees, boards,
commissions.
Where's the green team fit?
It doesn't, no. It would never have that right. Sorry. So how do we describe or we have here agencies, committees, commissions, boards, and the green team, how would we characterize the green team or other...
the affiliates, then?
Affiliates appointed by the township?
Affiliates appointed by the township committee.
Okay. Affiliated. How about we say affiliated organizations designated by the township?
Yeah, I want to make sure it's limited to the... to essentially these walls, so to speak.
Yeah. And then what happens is that the other language says if there's any disagreement as to who's going to get to use it, it comes to the township committee, which gets the final decision.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if the green team comes in, you can, yeah.
So read out what that line's going to say now to us.
So how does this sound? Tenant agrees to give reasonable access to the township, its agencies, commissions, committees, board, or other affiliated organizations designated by the township.
Okay. And then the rest of it is all stricken.
Can we strike the rest of that?
Yeah, down to requests for use.
Yes, correct.
Okay, so I think that covers that.
Yeah, here's what I'll do. I'll circulate it. People want to massage the language a little bit more in the next day or two because they, you know, got a chance to think about it a little bit more. Just let us know and we'll make whatever changes you want to make.
Okay.
In case when you think about it, say, well, you know, it really should be this, too.
Okay. And then, realistically, do we then send this to them for signatures, and then us, or
I think
does
that
it
would make sense? Yeah.
Okay. So once it does that, then so can we just approve it based on that language, and then we can
that's okay.
Confirmation of the mayor and Karen that we will send it to the fire department for signature, so we can say we're done with it.
Yeah,
we're
checked off. Let's
file it with the changes, right?
Yeah.
We need a motion?
Yes.
Okay. And this was our...
this is the fire department lease.
Lease agreement with the changes as noted. I'll make a motion to approve it to be sent over to the fire department for their signatures and then returning to us for ours.
I'll second that.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Okay. Excellent. And then the next part of that is the fire department hall agreements. And see any more issues with that, if they're happy with it.
Is the occupancy resolved?
As far as 108 people?
as far as 108 people, and if is the renter responsible for a fire official permit if they're above 100? I thought that was the issue that was outstanding. To make people know that if the, my understanding is if you have an event in any facility of over 100 people, you need another permit from the fire official.
Right.
And given that this has an occupancy of 108, do we make the renter aware that they're responsible for getting the, I think it's another $32 permit.
That would be governed under some sort of existing ordinance or building code, wouldn't it?
Yep.
So couldn't that just be something we make aware as we're showing somebody that this is a, hey, we can do up to 108 people, but if you have over 99 or whatever, you're responsible for getting the additional life hazard permit or whatever that might be.
That's my question, whether we should have that in there so that they know it, because the average person planning a birthday party for 108 people probably isn't going to be aware of that. Yeah. And rather than have it just be a verbally, whether that should be in there.
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing is if on that line is line six, if we just note that over 99 people requires additional life hazard use, use permit.
And that the renter is responsible for getting that permit and any fees that are...
Right. You know. So do you have that, Dick?
I think so. Yeah. I think we should bring it out. Okay. So what I wrote here is if lessee is to have occupancy in excess of 99 people, lessee must secure life hazard permit and pay any required fees. I think the language could be slightly better, but that's generally what you want, right?
Yes.
So if we can massage the language and just...
Right. So...
And that includes staff. If it's not at the same place as the
other... You say 99 people? Should we say including staff?
It says that the 108.
Yeah. Right.
So right. Let's make that consistent.
Okay.
Cool. So then based on that language change, if we could then approve the rental hall agreement.
I'm just looking, just maybe you can help me.
Yep.
We had a discussion of whether the renter has to supply insurance, and that is still in here. Okay, so that...
Yeah.
We agreed that that's some... They go to their homeowner's insurance.
Supply. They have to get a rider in their homeowner's insurance. So, with those changes, a motion to approve based on those wording changes?
On the changes that we have made to item 6... which makes aware of the renter of the possibility of a life hazard payment. Those changes for the whole rental conditions of agreement. I'll make a motion to approve it with those changes.
I'll second that.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Okay. The assessor position, this is...
One jump back here.
Oh, sorry.
Just wanted to make sure of that, and maybe I missed it, but the rental agreement, looking quickly to see if it actually incorporates the whole rental conditions, I don't see it actually saying that.
It's not part of it, so it should approve the conditions too?
Well,
separate item?
Actually, what I meant is I think I should just put in the rental agreement the fact that it includes the whole rental conditions of agreement as a part of that agreement.
Yeah.
Does that... Can we just add some language if that's not in there already?
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It may be in there, and I just looked through it quickly, but...
Mm-mm. The next item is the assessor's position. As everybody knows, our assessor is retiring. And we talked about notification because we had thought some options weren't available. And now there's potential that Reddington would be interested in going into a shared service agreement so that they could notice as a full-time position because they lost what they feel was a good candidate for the position because they couldn't offer full-time. So they were looking to us because Mary was also their assessor to go into that and looking at if we would be potentially interested in that, that they would then notice that position as a full-time position with the understanding that there would be a shared service agreement between them and us. And they're basically looking for us to say yes or no, that we'd be interested, so they would start noticing in that position. And my opinion is that it's an option. You know, it's not a guarantee on either side, but allows us another option to try to get that position because the way the state changed the pensions, it really only applies to people with full-time positions. So it's more, you're going to probably get a better shot at having somebody that you know, applying for the job as a full-time as far as a part-time, because there's no added benefit on the pension side of things if you're doing part-time.
So I guess my only question would be that currently we are on a two-day process right now, and this would be a one-day process where we have the individual one day.
Correct.
In your studies, and you have talked to Mary, do you feel that that is adequate time for the township and her to be able to achieve her job?
Yes, but there would be other things we would have to look at for adding other support staff potentially.
Adding other support staff?
On a lower level, like clerical possibly, to do non-technical
items. Is that of something that's of immediate nature? If we were to go this route, do we then have a knee-jerk reaction?
No, I don't think so. I think that's something that we then would have time to sit down with Karen and lay out a plan for this scenario.
I like the idea of a shared service. I think that's what we should be kind of leaning ourselves to. As long as limitations, times, and an accessory staff works out, I don't see a problem with it.
Are there any union contract issues between the two, like Reddington's? I don't know.
Well, it doesn't matter. We're in a shared service with them, so it's all...
It's all on their side, so
right.
That person's covered on their under their...
Right. They would just come back to it with a value to us saying this person is worth X for that day,
mm-hmm.
and that would include all
right.
the benefit costs and everything along with it, and that's mm-hmm. what we would agree to pay for. So all that kind of thing would be out of... It would take one thing out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Oh, I'm just
you have a thought.
No, I'm just. So she, the would be an employee of Reddington.
Yes,
yes.
Current.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
So basically, at this point, we're just looking that the committee is interested, and that we would be able, we would be willing to give, basically, the approval to Reddington that we would be interested in being part of that process as a shared service if they would notify for that as a full time
advertise
for it and. We would be, you know, provided the person met our needs and be part of the process. I mean, it seems like the...
I'm kind of putting myself where I'm at. How about you guys?
I know it changes, it could change a little bit of dynamic of the office, but I think, you know... And we'll discuss how it affects that with, you know, Karen more in details, but we're not there, and we're trying to figure out how we can get somebody for that position, and I think this is an opportunity we have, and then we can see where we can fill in afterwards, but we have time, you know,
mm-hmm.
to do that end. So basically right now it's just an approval that we're willing to entertain that shared service idea for with Reddington, and so they can go out and advertise for a full-time position.
What happens if it doesn't work out? Like, how are we tied to it?
It'd be a shared service agreement that we could set up for a 1 year or 2 year. Like, we have the 3 year contract with Tewksbury for the construction as a shared service. You know, this would be a 1, 2, or 3. So we'd be in a better position, quite frankly, because if we didn't like the person, we have a better shot at pulling out.
Right,
and
not the employee of our township.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it actually, correct me if I'm wrong, we're actually in a better position in a shared service agreement like this.
I agree.
So.
Yeah. Do you have to have an agreement with Reddington or a concept agreement before they go out? And
they just asked that we were interested.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. They were just going to advertise salary, everything to be determined, but this would clearly kick off a
more detailed
discussion.
Yeah, they were just that we were interested in a shared service and we're open to it, and then they could kind of see what was out there on the workforce.
Sounds great.
To discuss. So then I need a motion.
I would make a motion that we entertain or express to Reddington our interest in a potential joint service for a tax assessor position.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. Getting down this. Fire official position, really all I'm looking for here is dates that people are available to do interviews so then Karen can contact the applicants to set up interviews on those dates.
Do you want to provide shared services for that position?
Good, but I don't think we have it's not the same scenario. It doesn't. You can get these positions, this position, easier than an assessor. Yeah.
I mean, are you looking what?
The dates
this
that
week, next week wouldn't.
It doesn't matter. Just something that we can tell Karen. Maybe 2 days that people are available to then reach out to the applicants to say, hey, we've after whatever time, people available 6:30, 7. I would think an interview would be.
It's only this week's here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A 45-minute window, I think, for an interview. Do you think that's sufficient for this?
You looking sometime after 5 o'clock?
I'd say after six. Just for myself.
Next week has Good Friday in it, so Monday through Thursday.
I'm leaning to the 12th and the 13th.
Okay, yeah. There's nothing here, so.
A Monday and a Thursday to spread them out, whatever.
Well, Monday's Park is here. I mean, Monday Park is here on Monday. So Wednesday and Thursday is open here. So if we 12th and 13th?
That'll work for me.
Okay, so I'll tell Karen 12th and 13th to reach out. And
at what time?
What would be the earliest you'd want to do them? 6, 7? Six is the earliest I would go.
Yeah, six is the earliest for me also.
You know, but I mean, if we can go later, I know you're working a little further away. I mean, they're coming to us.
Yeah, let's go at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
And I assume you'll need to notice.
This is going to be considered as special because everybody is interviewing. Okay.
Yeah.
Are we going to get that in the paper?
Oh, is that going to be in the paper?
That's what I was just making sure she was aware of.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Can we get that?
Yeah, because it would be the night
too out. Close.
It wouldn't come out to the 12th. I don't know.
Do we have to push it then to the 18th or the 20th? Mm-hmm. To get it the notification.
We're gonna make it or no?
Oh,
spread now.
Why don't they have that bill passed so we can just post it on the internet? Mm-hmm. You think so, Kim, or no?
If the ad is put in on Monday morning, it should go in.
Is it good if it's to have it on the 12th? So if it goes in on the 12th paper, we can still have the meeting, the special meeting?
48 hours notice, isn't it?
Yeah. So.
Do the 18th and 20th.
So, I mean, I'm good on the 18th and 20th. Is everybody else the 18th and 20th?
I am.
Should work.
Okay.
Yes? Is that good for... Okay. 18th, 20th. And then Karen will set up who can come and when. If we might not even need both days, but this way we have the available.
Starting at 6 o'clock, and you're going to space them
45 minutes
apart?
Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got that? Thank you, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then animal control update. Is there anything
oh, are we
you
already
to?
To that? Yeah, we're going fast. Yeah, we've gotten through 6 interviews and evaluations, so we're done. And you're going to have recommendations on 2. That's what you guys wanted. Now, mm-hmm. what nobody can seem to remember is, do you want to then interview these 2, or do you just want to read through the recommendations and we make a decision?
My opinion is I would say we read through the recommendation, read through what any notes that you've taken, mm-hmm. and then at that point we can make the decision.
Okay.
Either way, you can either make the decision, yes, we're good with it, or no, we want to bring them in, you know?
Okay.
And we may decide we want to bring in just one person, you know, just
yeah.
to kind of just say this is our gut, but do we want to
yeah.
just have our own talk? You know, but
makes
I think
sense.
We'll leave that open to that point when you're ready to present those, your findings, so to speak.
Yep, you'll have that in the next couple of days.
Okay, let me just, sorry, I'm going to add this, or I'm going to miss it myself. And give me 1 second.
Me too, I'm just putting these interviews in here. Just 6 p.m.
Just so I don't.
It's
killing me. It's growling.
That was me, one of those meetings. I was louder than you.
Okay.
And then me again.
Then you again. Fire the picnic.
The picnic. June 10th. Invitations are going to go out by May 1st, and I just wanted to thank Kim for spending as much time going through all that detail with me, bringing me up to speed on what we did in the past, and that was a huge help.
Okay.
Oh, and a Q crew was booked. They didn't need a deposit. They actually waived it. So.
Oh, okay.
But I think they were already in the process of getting one anyway, so they might get it.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. I guess we've done enough with them already. I guess
yeah.
they figured they're going to get paid. So.
I told them we were good for the money.
Right. So then the group accident coverage, this is what, Tom, you have talked about a number of times. This is essentially that
yeah, what we did
rider.
Is we
and then
had looked into it quite a while ago, so Karen revisited it, and it remained the same, the coverage for up to 75 volunteers participating in any event. The premium notice to the township would be $350. This is a secondary coverage. The primary coverage of the individual would be the first to afford an accident policy. If someone fell through the cracks, this would be where their insurance would be covered, doing a volunteer type event for the township. And I think it's included now with the Junior Police Academy that this would also cover their insurances for an accident. So I think that it's something, you know, we're getting into the season now.
Yep.
I think it's something we should consider doing just to have an additional layer of protection going forward.
And it was minimal. It was
$350
yeah.
is the premium.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a no-brainer.
There's, I think, the $250 deductible
yeah.
on this.
My understanding is it's 2 different premiums for this, though, which I think is great,
mm-hmm.
but it's 2 different policies.
Oh, for the Junior Police
Academy? For the Junior Police, because that's youth mm-hmm. for 20 people, 20 participants, so that's
oh,
the
okay.
right number.
Anticipating around 20.
So that had to be a different policy? We couldn't combine it?
That's what I understood.
I don't know
if
it could have been a blanket
okay.
provided by the town. I just had inquired on a rider just to cover us if
okay.
your kids fell down running or something.
No problem.
If it could be something that would cover volunteers throughout the...
Oh, I see, yeah.
As I understood, the volunteers are for adults, and the mm-hmm. other one is for youth.
So it's $350 for the one and $350 for the other.
Right, they both happen to be
for the insurance for the yeah. Junior Police Academy, and then $350 that covers the other the other groups.
Yep.
Okay.
You know, Karen had said that there was another bid coming in from another insurance. Mm-hmm. So I just have the one she had sent down to me. I don't know if it would be any different if that one would just encompass the whole town for the whole year for any volunteers and for you know, cadets. So I don't know. I have not seen that other estimate.
When did you plan on starting up or getting the police junior police academy going?
My plan is to my plan was to go from June 19th to the 23rd, Monday through Friday. Originally, the school was getting out the week before. Now they're not getting done until June 19th. Eighth grade students, my target age, eighth grade graduates, and I'm thinking around 20 kids. So I'm just going to do it from that Tuesday to that Friday.
Okay. Do you anticipate Karen getting back another quote for this insurance before that time, before our next meeting?
It's in your packet.
There's another one.
Do you have it?
Is that the RPS one?
AIG. RPS was the first one.
Yeah. Karen had said another one was coming. So.
$500 on this one.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The way I see it.
So, the first one is
RPS. So I think okay. The first one.
Yeah. So it was $350 and $500 essentially is the way I read this then, right? The adult was the $350 still for theirs and then put a $500 on the second.
Is that combined? $500 for both? Can't tell. There's one premium of $350 and another premium of $500. Is that the way I'm seeing that on the first page?
Yeah.
So that would be actually $108.50 versus $700 with the other one. That's the way I'm seeing it.
So the one that's $350 actually in general has better coverage.
Yeah, exactly.
The $350 one is actually in over that. If you look at the whole thing, is actually better coverage. There's one lower number there, but in general, everything else is better coverage.
Yeah. It's a little confusing because sometimes they're called Bollinger, sometimes they're called RPS, but I think those are the same.
Same, yeah.
Bollinger RPS. So I think the AIG is the $500 premium, and that's less attractive.
Hmm?
I see that the AIG plan being less attractive, as Mark said, both higher cost and lower coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the two RPS / Bollinger
ones make more sense because they got.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had to analyze that correctly. Do you want to look into participating in these programs by Bollinger?
I think it's a wise idea.
I do too. So then we would go both for the adult and the youth, which is 75 participants and 20 participants, right?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, and I believe I have them here to sign, too.
Excuse me?
I have them in my packet to sign if we do approve it, too.
So. Was that a motion you made, or?
I mean, if someone's willing to make that a motion, if not.
Oh, you didn't make the motion.
I haven't made it yet. But I will make that motion for this to be awarded for Bollinger Sports and Leisure Insurance for our volunteers of up to 75 in our Junior Police Academy youths of 20 participants with a premium of $350 for each, if I am correct. Yes. I'll make that motion.
I would second that motion.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Then we just have a letter here that Brian had sent just basically to the Deputy Director, Division of Property Management regarding Hagedorn, just asking for some more, telling him our concerns and just asking for some information. He sent this out last week, so I don't... Yeah, he sent this out last week regarding their other letter, so obviously we haven't heard anything back yet. Last time is then, Jack, if you want to where we are with the speed limit, what I need to do or what we need to do with Steve.
Okay, all we need to do is we're going up with the resolution or the ordinance, however you want to word it, for a residential speed limit, is notify any adjoining towns where those roads are roads in common. That would be Clinton Township and Hampton Borough. A portion of those roads are already posted, so there's no input on your behalf as far as what we want to do proposes a speed limit. All it is simply a notice that we're doing it. I'll meet with Steve. I'll give him copies of the data I have here, and all he has to do is basically draft a letter, send it down to the Department of Transportation that this is being done in lieu of, you know, to increase safety in the township, and there is no impact on traffic, and there's no commercial traffic impacted as far as restricting roads, widths, weights, stuff like that. It's really the only time the commissioner of the Department of Transportation really grabs a hold of something if you're affecting commercial traffic. This is all traffic, none biased, so it's just imposed a speed limit, and the town is basically free to go ahead and do that.
Okay. So last time we discussed this, it was a question of the sort of the scope of the engineer study, whether that was a high cost, low cost.
Right. Yeah, there was uncertainty with that because a lot of the documentation I was finding, there was a lot of gray area in it. And I was making calls, and I finally got a hold of a retired trooper working for Department of Transportation and said, yep, Jack, I'll walk you through this. And we sat for an hour and went over all the statutes involved and everything. He said it's a very light lift for your town.
Okay.
Because you're not affecting a state highway. You're not trying to change the characteristic of the road or the speed from another town into your town since they're already posted. You're not targeting commercial traffic or anything like that. And as long as you stay within that 85th percentile of your speed of the traffic, which this data here will sustain, most of the traffic is going around at 35 to 45, so you're well within the tolerance of a 35 mile an hour speed limit if you wanted to, impose that throughout the town on the non-posted roads.
So it should be just a couple hours of engineer time?
Right, exactly. Okay. It's really just writing a letter up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be in a survey or anything like that, so...
In the old form, that's what it sounded like. He would have to go out and measure roads, and it sounded like he was going to be out there for 3 years.
Yeah.
A tape measure.
Right.
But that's not the case. I'll supply him copies of all my data. He basically puts it together and says, yes, this is, it's that 85 percentile, and this is where 35 miles an hour is what we had talked about. You can impose it lower if you chose or higher.
Yes,
I would.
35 seems.
35.
Does that match up with the adjoining towns? They're at 35 already.
Yes,
the speed limit. So
35, and then going down into Hampton, it drops to 25 down to Robin Hill and stuff like that in that area.
All right.
So basically, the motion to then allow authorize Jack to reach out to Steve and get the letter created and continue the paperwork for the DOT. We're good with that.
I have to repeat it all, and I just say I'll make the motion.
make the motion to allow so Jack can reach out to Steve Reese, our township engineer, to draft the letter to go to the DOT.
You want to say it again?
No.
That's it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Make the motion as stated. Okay.
Make the motion as Mark has stated.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
That was
second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. Wonderful. Wow, we got through that all the way down to M. Wow.
What a night.
At times it was painstaking.
Raffle license application. New Jersey Center for Tourette Syndrome and Associated Disorders, Inc. They are doing a raffle on June 17th, 2017, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. At 227 Turkey Top Road in Port Murray.
Is that Camp
Bird? What is that?
Yeah.
Is that Camp Bird? Oh, okay. So can I get a motion?
That is Camp Bird?
Yes. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Abstain.
Yes.
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 Okay. Then we have here Raritan Headwaters' request for donation to support them in their clean communities, their water. Water Cleanup Day, which is April 22nd. We had donated to them last year, and they kind of forgot to request this from us this year, and they actually already had the T-shirts made saying you were supporters.
So we're ahead of the game.
So... basically, this is to basically say that we're willing to support them and provide them with the $300 donation like we did last year to support their cleanup efforts.
I'll make a motion to support Raritan Headwaters with a $300 donation.
I'll second that.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 We have the minutes here from the historians. Everybody look over them.
You got the vouchers?
Oh, I missed. I went on. I missed. I didn't turn my page. Yes, presentation of vouchers. Sorry.
I don't have any over 1,000.
I don't have any.
I've got the spring newsletter mailing for $1,922.96. I have got diesel for the DPW, $1,979.45. Fuel oil for the municipal building, $1,001.10. And salt, $3,289.69.
I have one here for Dip Art and Kiefer. This is general services rendered for Mount Laurel, $1,140.18. And professional services rendered for the general account, $3,351.45 for a total of $4,491.63. That's it.
Can I get a motion to approve the vouchers?
I'll make a motion to approve the vouchers.
I'll second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Okay. Yes, then we also, now I'll go to the correspondence, which was from the township historians. And it looks like Victor is our chairman again of the historians. He's a glutton for punishment, I guess. Make him feel important. Can I get a motion to open to public comment?
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay. Now it is open to public comment.
Yes.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, well. Yeah. Well. Waited all this time. Holy cow.
Hi.
You got binders. Uh-oh.
Oh, it's not so bad. My name's Julie Weldon. I'm on the Lebanon Township PTA, and we are hosting a spring carnival at the park on May 7th. And I've not actually organized an event of this magnitude, but I'm learning a lot. And we're hoping to have some food truck vendors. And we expect more than 100 people, so I'm working with Sue Schlesinger on the fire safety permit, and Karen Sandors on the food safety permits. And we got a recommendation from Hunterdon County Department of Health that we should handle the permits in a way that is most beneficial to us, and that would be that we file a single permit and include the vendors on our permit, so that, you know, our fee is waived as a nonprofit. Then that means they don't have to pay the permit fee.
Yeah, which is $75 a permit.
Right, which would make them more willing to be involved in our event if they don't have to pay that fee. And Dan Wyckoff at the County of Health, or the Department of Health, even provided me with a form that they've used in the past. I don't know if you want to see it, but it's a just a checklist. It's an event coordinator's registration form in which I would list each vendor's name, mailing address, telephone number, and email address. And then I have to have them sign off. In terms of fire safety, I would provide them with the cooking vendor guidelines and get their signature on that, showing that they're willing to comply with all of that. And then they would still be subject to those same inspections and need to pass, but it alleviates the amount of money that has to be spent. And it seems like everyone's on board, and they just wanted me to come here tonight for transparency purposes and to get your blessing that that's okay, in case somewhere down the line somebody says, well, hey, how come that food truck guy didn't pay their permit fee?
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I know Sue had reached out to me, and I figured that's one of the things I'm glad you're here, actually, because it was one of the things I realized now as you were talking that was on the agenda, was to get the approval from the committee to basically waive your permit for Sue for the fire.
Okay.
You know, okay. So so that we that was the other item that was, so it was like things, the bells going off right in my head. So it could have been an item N on there.
Right. No, N.
Yeah, because we got the M, so now the N. Yeah. So yeah, no, I heard about that. It was great, and like I said, Sue had reached out to me to ask if I would we would do the waive those fees for that also. Yeah, because if the county is willing to do that, because years ago they weren't willing to do that.
Right, and what he told me today is
permit.
That they actually recommend it. I think it's just
because my wife started doing the winter carnivals years ago at the Voorhees, and when that started, they weren't willing to do that, so we didn't get a lot of food vendors for that reason. So I'm surprised and glad to hear that they're willing to do that now.
Yeah, I was too, because I thought, well, gosh, we want to make money off of this too, so I want them to pay me, and I want them to pay for that, and they're going to tell me no.
Right, exactly. So, no, so that... That's really just for you to come here for that. So then basically then I just want a motion from the committee is that they're willing to waive the fire official costs for inspection for the PTA.
And do we need to endorse a county group permit? Or is that by telling us, was that...
They just wanted me to come to tell you, so I don't know if you need to approve that or I don't know.
I don't think we need to really.
What do you think, Kim?
We can probably make the motion. Then it's you know. Okay. So a motion to approve the group permit, and then also a motion to approve the waiving of the fire inspection fee for the group.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Thank you very much. And just for clarification, so both permits are going to be handled that same way, with the fee waived, and both of them are kind of a blanket permit for the PTA and all of our vendors.
Correct. Okay. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck. Hope you get good weather. Anyone else? I haven't used the gavel.
Rob Mikowski, Rocky Run Road. Just a couple quick ones. Having to do with the nodes going on the poles. It changed completely from when they first came in here. I'm glad the committee's on the ball. The other thing you have to remember, you're not going to be there forever, but the property owners will be, so you really should have them involved with whatever's going on. What you're doing now, like you said, there's eight of them there. You're only hitting them, but in the future, so you got to, like you said, you got to set it up for the future. That's the biggest thing there. The museum addition, you really should be looking into, just my suggestion is forming your own subcommittee to handle that. What we did is with the DPW garage, our architect was supposedly covering everything. Well, we had a contractor starting having a certificate insurance. What he had used was an old one from someone else, so he never followed that. He was making payments for work that was going to be done but hadn't been done. That was one of the reasons the architect and I didn't see eye to eye. When I got involved, I told him, we will only pay for what is done. So, same thing there. What you can do is you set up a good guy to be involved with the outcome. Hmm. When you have your pre-construction meeting there, you're going to be dealing with some smaller contractors who aren't aware with there's no fees for permits. So they may think, oh, we don't need to. No, you still need permits, but there's no fees. That has to be brought out. Little things like that. And you really should be looking for a certificate of insurance when they bid on their project, you know, just so they have it. And the other thing is there a fee for the prints? For
the architect's providing.
When they're bidding on it?
No.
So then you ought to at least have a certificate of insurance from them, just so that. That was pretty much the, you know, the things that covered it. And the other thing is I want to hit on is with the hall rental for the squad building, Station 3. You're putting a little bit of a burden on the fire department when it comes to the free ones. As long as there's nothing done. It was only several months ago here. We walked out of the meeting. Somebody had dumped the whole container of soda on the floor. So my point is, if they got to come in and clean the floor, how are they going to recoup those funds? Why don't you just say they have to have a deposit? You're not going to charge them for it. You know, everything's done. Even the volunteers there, they can get a, you know, check there for a deposit. It's all done.
Well, that's where we figure we get this done, yeah, and then come back like with that yeah. to get this through. Then we'll come back with
you're
what
right,
that
right.
agreement
just,
was. Yes.
You don't have to get real involved. Just a little simple thing there. But other than that, I think you guys are doing a hell of a job up there. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Anyone else? Seeing none, can I get a motion to close?
I'll make a motion to close.
Second.
Roll call?
Yes.
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 Okay. We are going to go into executive to discuss police officer interview, police officer personnel, COA, and there's something.
And potential litigation related activities involving the collective bargaining.
Okay.
Can I?
So that'll be resolution 41-2017 to go into executive.
I'll make a motion for resolution 42-17 to go into executive session.
Second. 41.
Not 41. Sorry.
Roll call.
Yes.
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 Can you get my email about the updated
when did you send it?
Last night.
Yeah, okay, I saw something come through from you. Okay. I just didn't.
That, did you get the ambulance? Dude, send me an email.
Since I don't have it on there. Yeah.